Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Diversity is a booming business. Organizations across the country are turning to diversity and inclusion initiatives, or D&Is, to chip away at inequity in the workplace. And they're spending billions of dollars on everything from commissioning studies and task forces to recruiting consultants to hold anti-bias trainings. And many companies are also creating new roles tasked with improving diversity, like chief diversity officers. In 2018, the job site Indeed reported that online job postings for diversity and inclusion professionals had increased 35% since 2016. But while the business of diversity is growing, diversity itself is not. Many groups remain underrepresented across industries and particularly in leadership positions. And joining me now to talk through the scope and the limits of diversity in the business of it is Pamela Newkirk, journalist and author of the new book, Diversity, Inc., The Failed Promise of a Billion-Dollar Business. Pamela, thanks for being with us.
Such a pleasure.
So let's start with the basics. We hear a lot about diversity. We hear a lot about inclusion. They're not the same thing. What is the difference between the two?
Well, diversity is having, I guess, representation of different groups in the workplace. Inclusion is making them feel like they belong to those institutions.
Two very different things. I want to get into how those kind of, you know, shake out.
Right.
Now, we mentioned a lot about diversity initiatives. We're seeing it's this billion-dollar industry. But why are we seeing so much money invested in this right now?
Well, that was the question that led me to my book. I wanted to look at this tension between the rhetoric around diversity and the billions of dollars that are spent and the fact that the numbers are not substantially changing, particularly in many of our most elite fields. I'm thinking academia, law, museums, you know, the arts in general, Hollywood. Academe. So why are we investing so much to get so little?
And so why are we? I mean, are companies just feeling like they have to do this now? Are they feeling like, okay, we've got to check this box in order to look like we're doing something?
Right. Well, I really can't get into the heads of the institution leaders who are doing this. But when you keep doing the same thing and expect different results, then maybe you need to step back and interrogate what it is that you're doing.
So let's talk about the goal here. I mean, we mentioned all types of things that companies are doing. They're bias training. They're, you know, trying to make more efforts to change. Are we talking about optics, Pamela? Or are we talking about real change? And what I mean by real change is hiring people into senior positions,
right?
Or are we just talking about covering the company?
Well, it does appear in many instances companies seem more concerned about the public relations around diversity than you know, social justice. We do see that when there are embarrassing missteps or revelations of exclusion, you know, homogenous workplaces or boards, that's when we all of a sudden see these high-profile initiatives. And then if you check in a year or two later, you haven't really seen much activity in the numbers, you know. So I'm focusing on the actual metrics, and they're just not moving.
So oftentimes we say, you know, one of the things that a lot of folks, when they talk about diversity in the workplace in particular, is that we say it's good for business,
right?
Right. But I want to unpack that a little because that also feels like a double-edged sword. I mean, it feels like, you know, should we be valuing quote-unquote diverse employees just because they're, you know, good for the bottom line? Or and are we doing that for non-diverse employees? Like, what? How does that really play out?
Right. I think there was a period during which the bottom line argument was made because nothing else was working. Mm-hmm. So there was this theory, if you tell companies that it's going to help your bottom line, and it may indeed do that, that there would at least be that economic incentive to achieve diversity, but not even that has worked in many instances. But the good news is that there are models. There are models that companies can replicate. You know, you don't have to recreate the wheel to make this work. Diversity, it requires intention. But it also in goodwill. I mean, you have to really be serious about this thing. I interviewed Columbia University President Lee Bollinger, and as he says, this doesn't happen by accident. It happens because you lean into it. And it's not something that you can just do by fiat. I mean, it takes a lot of unpacking, as you say, because it's a multi-layered problem.
So let's talk about that, because I was tweeting about this the other day, and one of the things I said that got a lot of attention was, you know, don't tell particularly journalists of color that you're hiring them or us because you need to diversify.
Precisely.
But then how do you do it, right? Because there's a balance between making someone feel like they've only been hired
right.
because the company or the organization wants to fulfill its diversity mission.
Right.
And then not doing it. So what? How do you balance that?
Well, that's the lack of goodwill. That's doing it for a reason other than just equity, inclusion, justice. What's, you know, do we live in a fair society or not? Are we excluding people because of their race, or are we including people because we want to be smarter? We want that insight that only can come from having that kind of diverse operation. And I think what often happens is it's viewed as a check a box, you know, we'll get this person in. And then that triggers resentment in the newsroom because, oh, you got your job because why'd you get your job? And so there's always this suspicion around hiring people of color. And this taps into centuries of demeaning stereotypes about people of color. It taps into just a well of what it means to live in a institution that is excellent. What does excellence look like?
And also the idea that, you know, we're only here because, you know, we have to be here because some optics are necessary, or,
right.
you know, we're here on some charity
initiative. Not because it makes us smarter,
right.
because it makes us better.
Or not because we're smarter and better.
Precisely.
Right? And so is there, I mean, we've got less than a minute left. Is there anything that can be done, do you think?
Well, one of the chapters that I deal with in the book is looking at Coca-Cola and how over 5 years it really focused on this issue after, of course, it was sued for discrimination and it settled a landmark bias lawsuit. And what they did is they examined the metrics across the workplace. They looked at job categories. They looked at salaries, bonuses, who was being hired, what did the candidate pool look like. And over time, they were able to both detect and disrupt patterns of disparities, patterns of bias.
Pamela Newkirk is a journalist and the author of Diversity, Inc., The Failed Promise of a Billion-Dollar Business. Pamela, thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking about the explosion of diversity initiatives in the workplace, which includes the addition of positions like chief diversity officers.
The chief diversity officer is so marginalized and not really in the main of the company, and it's like, okay, that person is responsible for diversity. It's like, no, everyone should be responsible for diversity, you know, up to the highest in leadership.
That's Pamela Newkirk, who we just spoke to, and she's the author of the new book, Diversity, Inc. And as she told us, many of these new positions and initiatives are failing to make any real impact. And I've been thinking a lot about this and about how putting someone in a role like head of diversity and inclusion can almost seem to give companies a way out of the harder work they need to prioritize diversity. So I turn next to two experts who study this very thing. Veronica Ribello is an assistant professor at San Francisco State University, and Courtney McClooney is a postdoctoral fellow at the Darden School of Business. And I put my concerns to Veronica.
So I certainly share your concern, because I don't think that these roles are a panacea in and of themselves. People's effectiveness depends a lot on the resources they're provided to do this work once they are appointed as chief diversity officers. So we do know that people in these positions are a lot more effective when they do have buy-in from leaders in the organization, when leaders have taken efforts to really prepare the other members of the organization to embrace and prepare for change, because any kind of broad change in organizations requires preparation and buy-in. So although there's not a ton of research in this area, Courtney and I both worry about the effectiveness of diversity officers, just given the limited resources a lot of them are given to do their work. And by resources, we mean a budget to do their work, time, people power in terms of a team, knowledge and prior experience. Do these diversity officers have prior experience in leading or managing organizational change or creating or testing different strategies? And then finally, information. There's some articles out there suggesting that sometimes chief diversity officers don't even have access to internal company data that would allow them to kind of identify where there might be problems as well as opportunities for intervention.
Courtney, a lot of times it goes beyond the diversity and inclusion officer. It's you know, doing a lot of promotion, but there isn't a lot of institutional support. It sometimes feels like it's more about the optics for companies than it is about structural change. Do you find that?
Yes, that's exactly the point I was just going to add in. So two of my mentors, Dean Lynn Wooten at the Dyson School of Economics at Cornell University and Dean Erica James of Emory's Gozeta School of Business at Emory University, they have done a lot of historic data showing that the appointment of chief diversity officers or even sort of this task force associated with diversity and inclusion within companies tends to come about after what they call a diversity crisis. So after there has been a very wide public scandal within the organization, whether they're involved in like a racial harassment lawsuit, sexual harassment lawsuit, or if there's been larger pushback from social movements, for example, that this company has been discriminatory towards customers, that is usually when the appointment of the officer comes about. So this both serves, as you said, as more of a window dressing, reputation saving move. And it would suggest that it's also very reactionary, that the company itself does not have this larger institutional strategic desire to create a diverse and inclusive organization. But it's more, again, going back to the compliance reasons of why we have Title VII and controlling how we're hiring and promoting people.
So let's talk about solutions real quick. From each of you, Courtney and Veronica, what should companies be doing better so that these are programs are actually having some sort of an impact on the bottom line here?
So one of the things that happened this past year was Starbucks closed down a lot of their stores in North America to do one-day-long diversity training in response to the two Black men in the Philadelphia Starbucks location being arrested for loitering. And although it was a bold move to suggest that we would rather lose revenue for a day to talk about this important issue, there was a lot of critiques on how one-day training is not sufficient because, as Veronica was stating earlier, issues around diversity, equity, and inclusion are built within the broader ecosystem. So it's not just how you're treating people on a day-to-day basis, but what is our larger overarching company model and how can we make this an ongoing progressive strategy, which is what activists who are calling for more equitable practices in companies that go beyond diversity and inclusion are also calling for, a recognition that there has been past wrongs historically at a systemic level to certain groups and making constant adjustment to how they're doing their work and going about it so that it can become an ongoing type of training and not something that just happens one time so people can check the box. So I would suggest that one thing companies can do is to really think more strategically and systemically about incorporating diversity, equity, and inclusion training.
Agreed completely. I don't think it's possible for organizations to identify a single training or single intervention that's going to solve problems that really have been building for hundreds of years since the foundation of this country. So promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion in a genuine, sustained way is going to require multi-pronged approaches, sustained efforts, significant amount of time. So it really does need to be embedded within the wider organizational ecosystem. So thinking about how leaders are recruiting, interviewing, and hiring new employees, training, developing, and promoting their existing employees, as well as compensating, incentivizing, and promoting them. So I think one starting point for organizations is to actually collect and analyze data to identify where they might have achieved parity and where there might be disparities. I think it's also really important that these data are intersectional. That is, we're looking at the experiences of multiple identity groups simultaneously. So for example, if we're just analyzing company data to see if there's a gender pay gap, that could lead us to overlook potential pay gaps within the category of women, say white women versus Black and Latino women. So I think it's really important that companies start to collect and analyze their internal data and develop strategies and interventions accordingly.
Veronica Ribello is an assistant professor at San Francisco State University, and Courtney McClooney is a postdoctoral fellow at the Darden School of Business. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Try that again. Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully, to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, November 1, 2019. So I have been told. This is our weekly compensatory. That's tomorrow. One day ahead of myself. Tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, we'll be here for the compensatory call-in. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. For folks who have problems, difficulties, challenges in the workplace, this is the broadcast to try to think of codified counter-racist suggestions that are logical, that make sense, that will help us solve problems without producing new problems in the workplace. If we have any victims of white supremacy, non-white people anywhere in the known universe, if you have figured out any strategies, tidbits, things to do, things to say that would help non-white people solve problems without creating new problems, please dial in and make sure that you have like explicit details on exact ways we can replicate some of your prominence. I won't say success, but at least some of the ease that you have in the workplace. If you can, you know, come in, you work your shift, do your hours, whatever your responsibilities are, you're not harassed, they don't call you racist names and what have you. You don't have to monkey shine to get through the day. If folks heard that, monkey shine is in the dictionary. I can't believe it. You can look that up, monkey shine. Anyway, before we get to details, make sure I get in. You can always email if you're not able to call to participate live. You can email untiljustice@gmail.com and we'll share your thoughts, commentary on the air. If you have suggestions, definitely you can email those and we will loud and clear broadcast your advice. Wow, so much to share today. It was a spectacularly lame Friday. Most of them are under the system of white supremacy. I was in class, yoga class this morning. There were quite a few cute non-white females, which is generally not the case. And even then, I said, man, what a lame Friday. Like, all the way through, all day long, lame day of white supremacy. The audience, speaking of lame, the audio segment that we heard in the beginning from New York Public Radio, and they were talking about the booming diversity business. They said diversity crises. They were talking about Coca-Cola, and they said, or about the diversity business in general, that a lot of times companies don't get this diversity business, get a chief diversity officer and the like. They don't do this until they have had a diversity crisis. They've been sued by somebody. And I said, diversity crisis? Last week, they were talking about why Black people specifically, not Black and brown people, Black people in North Carolina don't have water. And they said that gerrymandering by the non-minorities helped to explain the problem. And now we got diversity crises. Imagine me trying to explain this and sound logical, like I have my brain computer is functioning at all. What happened? Well, the non-minorities, they gerrymandered and had a diversity crisis. And as a result, everybody got laid off. Like to what? What is? Words are crucial. And they will come up, and that must be somebody's job. I don't know if that is the chief diversity officer, but somebody has that job to come up with terms like that so that we can avoid being accurate about the problem. Diversity crises, racial animus. That was the one in the workplace racism report from the NFL, not the NFL report this week about their diversity hiring numbers, but the report of workplace racism way back from the Jimmy Incognito days in Miami, where they didn't say racism, they said racial animus. That must be somebody's job right there to come up with all kinds of terms. Just keep them coming, because we know it's going to be more incidents. So just keep them coming. Any of these vague, kooky phrases that, you know, avoid indicting whites as being white supremacist racist. Microaggression, that's another one. Somebody probably got a big raise for that one. Let me get back to, because I took a lot of notes just on that audio clip. They said all of this booming $1 million, probably $1 billion for Jane Elliott and Tim Wise and Robin DiAngelo and probably lots of other race soldiers that have been on the cows. Colin Gordon most recently, because he said he did get paid speaking engagements. To chip away at racial disparities. That's another one. Somebody got a raise for that one, too. To chip away. As I understand, when you chip away at something, I mean, that's not an explosive act generally. When they make a freeway, when they make a tunnel like they did here in Seattle, you don't chip away. When you have a problem like racism and you chip away, it doesn't sound like we are trying to solve this problem. How does that moron say it? He said, as soon as possible. Chipping away sounds like we do not intend to make any sort of major progress. Like we might help one or two Negroes, you know, this decade. But I mean, we're gonna chip away at our We're gonna chip away at our diversity crisis. Next, they said they had all females on the panel. I thought that was interesting. And I've noted that many of the dialogues that take place dealing with workplace racism on public radio or any sort of major outlet, most of the time it's all females and they talk exclusively about female problems. They might even talk about white women problems with regards to diversity crises, but they generally do not talk about black males. I think one of the very few exceptions I can think of is the teaching industry. And I mean, it's like no black male teachers there, but it's very rare that I can think of workplace racism reports that get lots of attention that in any way include or talk about black males at all. Black male privilege, I guess. One of those females who was in the report, Courtney McClooney, I think she is right here in Seattle. The Darden School of Business is a part of the University of Washington. I have walked by there. It wouldn't even let me in the building, but I have walked by there many a times, even after they have refurbished. I'm gonna have to double check to see if she actually is here. Man, mandatory. I said I took so many notes. They talked about black people, non-white people, I think they used another one of those terms, people of color, that on a job, we might feel some sense of inferiority. What are you doing here? You're just to check a box. You're just to fill a quota. You're not even qualified to be here. Again, the evidence. This is not Gus T's opinion or my truth. The evidence, according to every report that I've seen from whites talking about affirmative action, the people who have benefited the most from affirmative action by far are white. White women, if you want to be specific, but even white men, disabled white men, gay white men, transgender white men, and all the rest. White people have benefited most from affirmative action. If we just want to talk about the Amy Fishers and Amber Geigers of the world for a moment, I have never, in all the times that I hear reports about affirmative action, I have never heard anyone say, look here, Hillary, Secretary of State, you ever feel, you know, you weren't qualified to hold that position? You're just holding that as some skirt. This is a new era. We want to look progressive. Look at here, Elizabeth Warren. You're running for president. How often have you felt that you weren't qualified, that you just got that position just to check a box, just so we can say, hey, we are not sexist. I voted for Elizabeth. I don't hear people say that about white women at all, and they should be the number one target to bring up any of that trifling commentary about, oh, yeah, you just got this as a quota. It's not black people that are overrunning campuses, male or female. It is white women, without question. And the audacity to have all females on the panel, I think some of them white women, and they even pose a question like that about black people feeling some type of way on their job. They even have victims who talk that. Any conversation about affirmative action should be redirected to white women as the beneficiaries and asking them how they feel about that and how that has impacted their confidence and sense of what do they call it? Imposter syndrome. Maybe I'm not really qualified to be here. They just wanted to hire a skirt for this job. Ask white women those questions. That should be the response from every logical thinking non-white person in the known universe, unless I'm misinformed about who has benefited most from affirmative action. Next, they use the word fair. Words are so important. They even use the term certain groups. They got to the end and they say, we do all this. We need to have diversity. We need to have inclusion seminars to talk about the history of inequities, not things that are happening right now, but the history of racial disparities and microaggressions and diversity crises that have happened to certain groups. What? The non-minorities? What certain groups are you talking about? All of that niggerish language, and I'm using that word deliberately, all of that is why these programs, what they call chip away, they generally just reinforce and strengthen white supremacy racism because you end up with lots of nonsense jargon like what I have read off there, fair, certain groups, diversity crises, microaggressions. You just end up with lots of that nonsense jargon that does not describe anything and probably a lot of references for racists like Tim Wise and Jane Elliott and Robin DiAngelo. And the list will just go on and on and on as more whites say, hey, let me cash in on the diversity business and get some of these millions. I can write a book and talk about how I'm reformed and used to tell racist jokes and bring me into your company. We'll talk about racism. I'll get me a few $1,000s and this is a great little side gig. Racism goes on. Niggers still don't get hired. Lots I could have said about that clip. Moving forward, a lot of people did write in untiljustice@gmail.com. For workplace racism, and I will make it my duty to get through all of the emails today. But since Gus T is now employed as a yoga instructor, I will be going first for every workplace racism. I certainly would not be a hypocrite to sit here and say this is not for spectators. We should not have people who just look forward to listening on Friday or listening to the archives that this is about participation, that that's one of the problems, victims of racism not talking about things that are happening to us on the job. Because if we did, we would see quickly, oh, wow, whites do a lot of the same things. They urinated in my helmet. They did that, too. They urinated in my beverage. They did that to you, too. Oh, we would see it so quick if we shared that information. It wouldn't be anything to be embarrassed about. It's just, if we had done this sooner, we could have maybe figured out some things. We would have realized, like, wow, they just do the same thing everywhere. What does it mean to be white? I will be going first to not be a hypocrite in figuring out, and I'm still learning myself and trying to figure out, you know, what things work. Being a yoga instructor here in Seattle, I'm not sure what it would be like if I was an instructor in an environment with a lot of black, like if I was a yoga instructor in Atlanta. Oh, I forgot one. Freaking Atlanta. Let me pause my yoga for 1 second. I found it, talk about hypocritical. They said Coca-Cola had one of those, their diversity crises, and that prompted them to do better at, I guess, hiring and promoting Negras. I lived in Atlanta, Georgia. Coca-Cola's headquarters is in Atlanta. It's right downtown. You can walk right by it. Anybody that has been to Atlanta, or if you live in Atlanta, the Coca-Cola headquarters is right there. I mentioned that when I talk about the significance of the city of Atlanta and how many Fortune 500 companies they have, Coca-Cola being one. How are you in Atlanta and you can't hire and promote Negras? It's about 50,000 Negras standing outside of Coca-Cola right now, I bet, just because of the volume of black people in Atlanta. How can you not find and hire black people there? I could see if it was a company here in Seattle, that, oh yeah, we just can't find Negras. That's what they said. I played that clip before. We'll have to migrate. We'll have to bus them in, fly them in. I don't know. But we don't have a whole lot of Negras here. I could see maybe if they were saying that in Spokane, but Atlanta? Back to my story. If I was in Atlanta, it would probably be very different if I was teaching yoga there or anywhere else, down in Florida, other places where there's more non-white people, especially if it was more black people. Being here, the refinement is so acute. This is actually one of the few workplaces where I think I know a few. I think education, I think in if you're like at a college, university, you would definitely be in a work environment where racism would be talked about. I can't think of any other fields immediately, but those are two where I am in a workplace where racism is talked about. I was at the studio, and I guess this is another component. Now, I went there to take a class, but since I do actually teach at this studio, it is work even if I am not working, even if I'm just there to practice. Just to take a class, I still view that as work, even though I am not technically on the clock because I do work there. And I think everybody else, I've said that before, that's the way you should function. If it's after hours and you're with employees, if you are on the work premises, but it's off hours, it would be the same logic because the cameras are still working and all the rest. And you're around, quote unquote, coworkers who easily could report that something happened and all the rest. So I'm at work even when I'm not. So I'm there to practice. Another instructor, white woman, she's talking about a book, Call to Action. I didn't even know the name. Make sure I get the title right. Skill in Action. I messed up the title. Skill in Action. It's written by a black female. It's about the exact topic because there's a lot of that in the yoga industry, diversity and inclusion, where they will bring in admitted racists like Anna Brown Griswold and other white people. They had a big article about that in Seattle Times over the summer. They'll bring them in and charge white people a lot of money. What do they say? Millions, billions, huge industry to come in and they can meditate and think about lynching. That's what I was told happened. Anyway, huge business. So she's talking about this book, Skill in Action, written by a black female. And she's saying that she'd like to talk about all of that with other people. And I'm thinking, whoa, because there was kind of a silence. Like, is she saying she wants to talk about that with me? Like, what? Oh, no. Nope. I've told folks I do not talk about racism on the job. I do know Mr. Fuller does have a caveat that if white people bring up racism on the job, that is something else entirely. That if they bring it up, well, then, hey, I think he even invoked the metaphor. Then you have a check to say whatever you want if it gets brought up. Now, I still encourage not talking about racism on the job, because sometimes white people, they are just fishing for information. They're trying to get you to talk, trying to get information that they're going to use against you at some point. They might even try to accuse you of being racist. I just don't see a benefit to sharing your views, accurate though they may be, about racism, what it means to be white. But if I'm on the job, and they're going to talk about racism on a regular basis and have Henrietta Lacks' book there, and this Skill in Action book, you all can check it out if you're interested. I think they use the term white supremacy. Gus T, I'm just talking about myself, VGQ, United Independent. I personally could not be in that environment as myself and not say something. Like I was thinking this week about all of this, and I said, man, that's how I ended up on the cows. It's because I could not be in that environment and function and not say something. Like, I would have to say something. Now, I don't know what would be the best thing to say to solve problems without creating new problems. And I would have to think of an objective. What am I trying to accomplish? I'll give you an example. I was going to say, I think we should remove Henrietta Lacks, that book, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. I think that book should be removed from the library. I was going to suggest that to the owner, but then I stopped. I thought this was the logic that I use. Why is that book there? Now, she said it's there because she wanted to include Black people specifically, but she couldn't find yoga books written by Black people to include. That's how Henrietta Lacks' book ended up there, even though that's not a yoga book. And it's not even written by a Black person. That was my logic in saying, see, that book shouldn't even be there. Let's remove it. But then I thought about it. Hey, we read that book in the book club 2014. Should be in the archives. I concluded that's a pretty anti-Black book, and I asked repeatedly, what do I think white people would think reading a book like this and the way that it portrays Black people, all of them, for generations? What do I think white people would think? I don't think white people would sympathize with Black people. Like, oh my gosh, it's terrible that we've had so many diversity crises. Maybe we should stop gerrymandering and microaggressioning them. Maybe we should, like, I don't think that would be the result of reading Henrietta Lacks. But I've already come to a conclusion about what white supremacy racism means. If that book is there for white people, then, you know, enjoy. There are non-white people who come to the studio. I just said there were two lovely non-white females there today. Now, is that book there for them? Do I think that's the best book to offer for a non-white female student, male or female? No. And it's not even written by a non-white person. I'm still conflicted as to whether or not it should be there. It should be removed. I guess you all can give a thought or two. I guess if you really challenged me on it because she said explicitly that it was there because she couldn't find a book written by a Black person, if that's a primary motivating factor in the book being there, then maybe it shouldn't be there because it's not even written by a Black person. There are Harriet Washington, medical apartheid, that could be there. Skill in Action, that could be there. I can think of at least two that would be substantially better, all written by Black people, and I would feel really good if some of the non-white people that are there, if they happen to stumble by the library and, oh, medical apartheid. Let me pick this up. I would feel spectacular, like way, I guess I answered my own question. Mr. Fuller said that that's good. I'll ask that that book be replaced. If you all can think of a better book that should be in a yoga library, because the Henrietta Lacks book is the only book, I think, I have to double check, but like I said, all the other books that I saw, they were like, you know, yoga books, which you would think should be in a yoga library. Anatomy, muscles of the body, yoga postures and such. That's the only book that, you know, doesn't really fit in per se. If you can think of a better book written by a Black person, male or female, that would be constructive, that you would feel good, that if a white identified, this segues to the other thing I wanted to make sure I said, an environment where the non-white people, students and instructors, and this is not anything specific to where I teach, this is in general about the yoga so-called community in the Seattle area, period. The non-white people are extremely white identified. And what I mean by that is that they do not think of or conduct themselves as though the individuals who are classified as white around them are racist, could be racist. When you talk to them, they defend white people, all of the things that we outlined, that Pam talked about this in her book extensively, defending white people against accusations of racism, minimizing racism, just all of that, and even sometimes being anti-Black on top of that, but finding different ways of minimizing, reducing white supremacy racism. And they'll have lots of white friends. They'll have lots of close contacts with white people, white friends, sexual partnerships, relationships, sexual activity with people classified as white parents, sometimes, like just lots of close emotional connections to whites. And so having seen that pattern over a period of time, I'm very mindful about that. That's why I tell people for workplace racism regularly. We're not going into a workplace just because we see a non-white person and thinking, oh, this is a teammate of mine. This is someone we have a shared interest. You know, we'll be able to function well together. Maybe, maybe not. You don't know. Everybody doesn't have an understanding of racism, white supremacy, and we are not a race. So we all don't have the same thinking about what we should be doing, how we should be responding to this problem. And the vast majority of non-white people don't understand racism, white supremacy. So that's going to generally compromise some of their effectiveness working together with another non-white person. That's generally been my observation. So that being my conclusion, I don't do a lot of going in at, oh, it's a non-white instructor, and immediately thinking, oh, I can bond and talk to this person, even if it's a black instructor, even if it's a black male instructor. I don't do that. Why? I can give you two examples. One, this happened about a year ago. Black male instructor. I met him for the first time. I was an instructor at this point. And I met him like, oh, wow, black male instructor. That's so cool. That's great. I should go up and say hi. Before I got to anything, a white woman saw him and literally she ran across the room. Was like, oh, Derek. And she gave him a huge hug. And it's like, yeah, that's killed my motivation to go and make an enthusiastic into, hey, I'm Gus T. I host the Cows. Second time, black male instructor. I'd seen him before, taken his class before. And I'm seeing him talking it up. I think the first time that I met him, I was not an instructor. And then the second time I was an instructor. And so we're talking, you know, teaching. I really wanted to ask him, like, what has your experience been as a black male? Like, hey, do you have any tips, you know, to stay safe in a yoga environment from any accusations from these white women, Emmett Till? A lot of other names I could have inserted, but that's the first one that came to mind. Bill Cosby. That was one I really wanted to ask, but I don't know. white identification. And before I could even get that question out, white woman comes up. She was in the class and she says, oh, Bill, his name wasn't Bill. Oh, Bill, you're staying with us this weekend? We'll have the police officer. Like, stay. Needless to say, I did not ask the question. But that's what I mean. Like the white identification that I suspect a lot of people deal with that in their work environment. It is acutely so in the Seattle yoga environment, maybe in the yoga environment, period. But that is definitely a hazard to say. I think the victims, make sure I emphasize that they are victims of racism. There is no other name needed. Victims of racism. That is easily, not even close, the most accurate title. But even as victims of racism, they can be hazardous. That was discussed in Invisible Man. And so for me, that just means being very mindful, not, you know, expecting that, you know, we're going to be tremendous friends, that they're going to like me, that we're going to be homies just because we're non-white, even if they are black. And thinking, yeah, that I'm going to be very careful about what I say. I'm not just going to be talking about racism with them or sharing any information, even if they bring it up. I will be very specific about what I have to say on the topic. The white identification is enormous. Had lots to say on that, what I'll share more as we go. And I guess I'll have an update because just processing, talking it through with you all. If the primary motivation for the book, Henrietta Lacks, Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, if the primary motivation for it being there is book written by a black person, it's not even written by a black person. There are way better books. So I'll let people know what I decide to say and how I phrase things as we move forward. I'll pitch for Medical Apartheid. That would be an excellent replacement that I can think of for the time being. But if you all can think of a book that would be good written by a black person, let me know. I guess I'll give one more this does not relate to me. This is a Cal's listener started a new job and they had to take identification badges, pictures, you know. And she was going to take her photograph and she said a white person came by and says, oh, you're getting ready for that mugshot. Those type of comments where black people are associated with being a criminal, it's so common, so tacky, and in my view, that's such an act of white supremacy racism. Folks, some people, it might be there, oh, they're just joking around. Consistently associating black people with criminal activity, that is a major component of white supremacy racism, done consistently. In my view, that's a great, I mean, sometimes, you know, you don't have to respond to everything, but that is a great one. And it's so common. I'll share this so that if it happens to anyone here, that's suggesting that I'm a criminal. You can just ask directly, are you suggesting that I'm a criminal? And just ask that question. I thought criminals get mugshots. Are you suggesting that I'm a criminal? What crime did I commit? That would be another one. Like, I would shut that down immediately. I don't think it's anything funny about that. I don't joke about that. I think it's a really tacky act of white supremacy racism. And I would for sure put that in the workplace journal. But just be mindful. And I'm saying it on air just because a listener did report that to me, that happened to them very recently. And it's so, so common. I've had other listeners who've had the same thing where it might not have even been they were taking a photograph or an ID, but it was something where they had a picture of them or something like that, or somehow their coworkers got a picture of them and put bars on it so it looked like they were in prison or a mugshot. The same thing. This suggesting I'm a criminal. Negroes are just naturally criminals. We're supposed to be stuffing the jails. That's what we do. We come out of the womb stealing. Let's see. I will read one of the write-ins from our listeners and then get to the folks who called. Let's see. All right. I'm a retired black male, and at this point in life will work a job temporarily to use, for example, their dental benefits. Smart. During the month of January 2019, I was hired at the Georgia Department of Labor as a specialist. I resigned after a week. My immediate supervisor, a white female, would not train me properly. Or talk about cliche. How many times do we mention that on the or on this program specifically, workplace racism training? If we got new people and you've never listened to this program before, we might say some things that you disagree with. I think that's one come to a conclusion on. That is staple in the system of racism, white supremacy, accusing black people of crimes, many times frequently falsely, and then not training black people properly. And then they can come with the, oh, you are just the worst worker we've ever had. Your efficiency is horrible. We just can't afford to keep you here. They didn't intend to keep you there. They didn't want to keep you there. And to do so, to make sure that they could do that, we are not going to train this Negro at all. Like, they'll have training. They'll do it sometimes where they won't let you know about the training. They'll be incompetent about the training. They'll be lazy deliberately about the training and not telling you things that you need to know and how to do this and how to do that. Then they'll go around and make sure that the white people get super trained and know exactly where to go if they have help, need resources, and they will make sure that they get clear instructions on what to do. That is frequently the exact opposite of what black people get. Exactly what this here listener said. Would not train me properly, and her boss, a white male, seemed to take glee at not providing sign-off documentation to verify that I'd mastered a particular task. That's one where I would want an email trail so that there is electronic verification that they are not responding in a timely manner, that I'm supposed to have it verified that I've done this and I'm not getting the verification email. And then you can do your CCs and all of that. And that's where I would CC the most powerful white person possible. We got a delay here in productivity because that's what they say. We're lazy and shiftless. We got a delay in productivity, but I'm not getting the proper signatures in an appropriate manner. I got a date and time for this one. It's dated September 1st. Man, we're going on November and I'm still waiting on my verification. Is that due process? Stay in the question lane. continuing and providingly. To me, this was inexcusable because people came into the office needing assistance to file their unemployment compensation claims, and I was not properly trained. Not even a week of orientation. I would not recommend anyone else in my position to quit a job. But like I said, I'm retired. That's in quote. Quotes, in my view, racist woman and racist man will never change for the better of all. Atlanta. He's in Atlanta. That is crazy. Everything is about Atlanta. Woof. Hate living there. My apologies to folks that live in Atlanta. My apologies. You have to suffer. They have such bad air quality there, too. But that's another thing, too. You have to be knowledgeable when you're in a work situation that is so toxic and where you're being abused and or this is not tenable. They are not training me properly. This is not an environment where I'm going to be able to even function. I can't even do. And this is serious work. I mean, as a Department of Labor specialist, this is serious work. People are looking to get their claims and everything, and you all are messing around and then being happy about me not being able to get work done, even though this is probably causing some other white people problems. I'm sure some white people who got claims submitted, they got white people in Atlanta, Georgia, too. Dedication, that is the word, dedication to the system of white supremacy racism. I'll get to the other emails as we proceed. The number again is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments to share, suggestions for anything that we have heard thus far, if you have your own situation you would like to discuss, folks with a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, everybody. I can recall in my readings the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King mentioned about, I'm not 100% sure that it's Coca-Cola, but it was some quote-unquote soft drink franchise that was in or near Atlanta, Georgia, about, and this was somewhere around 67 or 68, late in his life, before his life was taken, that he mentioned them in his speech as to quote-unquote boycott. So it has been a long-standing problem with either Coca-Cola itself or some soft drink company in and around the Atlanta area. Additionally, I was listening to the recordings that you normally do in the beginning of the program. And I thought it was interesting because white supremacists intentionally do not mention us when they are pretending that they are practicing some level of justice. And I put emphasis on there when they are pretending that they're doing it. They don't mention us specifically. They give these very vague distinctions, like you mentioned, and we heard in the tapes, as according to what they call civil court, they would mention the person's name, they'll mention a person's name, their age, and everything. So it's not like they can't specifically do it. They do it intently, keep it broad, keep the subject broad, keep the subject unclear. So when it comes to the point to whereas the victims of the crime start complaining about it or attempting to articulate on it, they have a lot of leeway to be able to be deceptive. And that is it's an old strategy by the racists that I've noticed you know, all the way up to their top levels of pretended justice. They would do that. And that's my first observation. I'll listen for other people and make comments if I deem it's necessary or if I can help in any kind of way. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I'm not surprised at all to hear white people just do the same thing over and over and over. She said that in the clip. You keep doing the same thing and getting the same results. That is exactly right. That's not by accident. That is not insanity. That is meticulous planning. Or you can just use the word I used at the beginning and that I used every time I give the definition. That is dedication. That is the exact definition of dedication. We just keep doing the same thing. We didn't hire the Negroes in Atlanta in 1960. 2016, we still don't hire the Negroes in Atlanta. I'm like, oh, well, like, that is what we are about. Other folks who dialed in, if we have missed you totally, proceed.
Hi, can I be heard?
Greetings, Draftomania.
Greetings, Gus, callers and listeners. Thank you for sharing about your workplace racism, Gus. That was very helpful to me because it's just a reminder that what you were talking about is basically what, you know, what I have to deal with because I work in a workplace that is all non-white, is black people. And as you stated, if you know, you go into those situations thinking that you know, just because they're black people, that, you know, you would think that you have something in common because because, you know, of the color of your skin, and, you know, you have this mentality because the way I grew up, you know, with this whole brother sister, you know, type mentality. But, you know, what's the old metaphor? All skin folks and kin folks. So thank you for sharing that. But I wanted to talk about my workplace racism. As I talked about on last workplace racism episode, I talked about how I got hired. So I had my orientation on Monday. I start. So when I went to work Wednesday, it's just funny because I've been having this ongoing situation where I've had, you know, I have different like family members and things like that. I have like very toxic upbringing and family members, and, you know, their friends, they have like, you know, people like they'll call your job and try to smear you and, you know, do all different types of things to get you to lose your job. So I've gone through this situation for a very long time, for some years now. So when I went to work on Wednesday, as soon as I got to work, I had been noticing some situations with the, I knew that eventually I was going to have to watch out because I've been calling in, telling you guys about the situations and how the issues that I've been dealing with different coworkers and supervisors since I've been there. Unlike the other gentleman shared, like the benefits are really good. It's a, you know, a state job. So like, you know, if I'm going to have to deal with it somewhere, so I might as well just learn how to conduct myself with the, you know, in the best way that I can. And I can't keep running from job to job, so I have to just deal with, you know, do what I have to do to survive. So I was accused basically by non-white black people. I had a bunch of accusations hurled at me. I was accused of not doing my job on Tuesday night. It was like some accusations, and what it basically was an instigation, antagonization tactic to try to see, and as I always talk about, this seems to be an ongoing theme of you know, people trying to instigate to get you to react. You know, I just basically like try to, you know, deal with this situation to the best of my ability. This is this another individual that's had issues with before. He was inebriated at the job and he comes to work drunk. They seem not to do anything and they're hiring him permanently. Okay, so I dealt with that situation. Then the next day, I come to work, and then the supervisor, because he was doing little things and saying things like he wanted to basically try to bait me into like an argument. So they'll try to like antagonize, try to see if they can get you upset to argue with them, or try to get, I guess, worried or concerned or scared, and maybe react to the way that they're, you know, they're acting kind of, you know, they're doing things to get you, to make you feel uncomfortable so you can kind of question yourself. So he told me that somebody had said that his boss had told him that somebody said I was in one of the offices talking to somebody for 45 minutes and not doing my job. Now, that's not true, because if I am talking to people, I am still doing my work at the same time. You know, and I think this is something that I've been hearing you talk about often on this show. And I kind of, when I went through the situation, I was like, you know what, Gus is right about that. You know what, I'm going to definitely limit any conversations, you know, based on, because like these people are basically kind of doing some sabotage techniques, you know, and this has been ongoing anyway, but this is a different crew now. And maybe they probably was doing it behind the scenes, but, you know, just not so overtly now. I was basically blamed for talking too long for different coworkers and just not doing my work, which is totally untrue. I stayed in the question lane. I asked some questions. I said, I need specifics. I need to know exactly what I did, who I was talking to when I did it. I was, you know, using all the things that I've learned from this program, asking questions. He couldn't give me specifics. He told me who was the one that came to him to tell me this. So I figured, you know, if this person told you to tell me something, the best way for me to get answers, because I told him, well, if somebody is making an accusation, you know, the best way that you can handle an accusation is by finding out exactly what it is that you've done, so you can then correct your behavior. So he was telling me he couldn't give me any specifics, but you can see that he was like, it was he was getting so much of a delight. You know, individuals like this, they just get a lot of, they get a thrill out of chaos and drama. And, you know, you could tell that he just really was enjoying this. And then he went on from there, after I was doing the questions, he went on to ask me then, because as I told you, like throughout the week, I had noticed that he was trying to like do things to try to antagonize me to react, but I wasn't reacting. I just been, you know, staying calm, collected, and just basically just not taking things personal. So, he then went on to ask me, if I had a problem with him. Now, mind you, I'm getting ready to get hired. So what, you know, I'm like wondering, like, where's all of this coming from? Only thing I could think, this is like some sabotage techniques. So he asked me if I had an issue with him. And I said, why are you asking me that question? I said, you know, why would you ask me that? You know, what's the reason for you asking me that question? What is it that I've done to make you think that I have an issue with you? So then he says to me, well, you've been acting different, which is totally not true. Just, you know, this, and I've been acting the same way I've been acting. But, you know, of course, you know, the insults and the accusations against me and hurled at me. So then I stayed in the question lands. I said to him, he said, well, you know how people around here talk. And I said, well, listen, I told you before, I don't get involved in gossip. That's one thing about me. I don't get involved in any gossip or anything that goes on around here with people talking. And I said, and another thing, you are also, you know, you have a habit of, coming to talking about individuals also. So he was like, well, I apologize for that. I got to get better at that. But, you know, what he does is he'll he'll talk, and he's a supervisor. He'll talk about one of your coworkers to you and try to basically triangulate to get you to say something. And then, you know, it's just a big game of triangulation. So what I do, I usually don't, I try not to say too much about anybody or anything, because I know that this is a game that they play. They all just talk about each other behind each other's backs. And then usually they're all friends anyway. So it's basically trying to get you to say something so they can run back and say what you said. And then you're the one that's going to be looking like the bad guy. So then after that, after I was on, you know, had to go through that issue, then he tries to triangulate again, and there's supposed to be an issue with some other coworkers, where one coworker, I come to work on last Saturday, and the first thing the girl says is, well, what are we supposed to be doing, because such and such is not talking to me. So when she says that, I totally like, well, you know, I don't have anything to do with that, you know, but I know that we're supposed to be doing A, B, and C, and get off that topic and keep it moving and do what I got to do. So he asked me a question in regards to what would I do if would I report somebody if I came to work every day and that person wouldn't talk to me. So I went right back to the questions. I said, why are you asking me this question? He's trying to pick me to see like how I would react and how to certain situations. And I'm like, well, why are you asking me this question? And he says, well, you know, so then when he said something about report, I kind of put it together who he was talking about. So I was like, you know what? I don't have anything to do with that. You know? So I said, he said, oh no, I'm not trying to get too involved in anything, but it just seemed like it was like a constant succession of him trying to set me up to have something negative to say. So what I ended up doing, after that conversation, I went to, his boss, which would used to be my boss. And I, cause she was the one that came, you know, told him about this situation with me supposedly having this 45 minute conversation without doing my work. You know, and I figured that I would be able to get more information from her as to what exactly what it is that was that I did wrong. So I went to her and she told me that, no, you know, this office of women, they're, she said that they're pretty petty, but somebody said something in a so-called joking way that they said something that you know, girl, I like her, but I don't have time to be talking. I got to do my work. So she said when she said that to her, that would send up a red flag. So then that's when she conveyed to my boss to tell me when I'm in there, just do my work and don't just say hi and bye and just keep it moving, you know, because they will make, you know, try to make make things into something small into a big deal. Because he was coming up with like different scenarios, like he was saying to me that well, maybe you was talking to somebody and you didn't say something to one person, and maybe, you know, everybody's not your friend just because they smile at you. And thank God I know that now, you know. But he was just kind of like dragging it on to kind of have you. I said, well, you know, should I be paranoid about this situation? And he was like, no, you don't have to be paranoid about it. I'm not trying to make you feel paranoid. So it was just, I just got better clarity by going to my boss. So I was able to get the context in which this whole situation and scenario went down. So, like I said, I'm just going to definitely be watching myself while I'm there. And like I've been doing, and trying to stay on cold and just continuing to learn about, workplace racism and just how to conduct myself as better and to become a better individual overall. And that's all I have to share. Thank you, Des.
Black brother, hell.
Context of white supremacy. Black brother, indeed. Mr. Edward Williams Jr., somebody asked, I think it was last week on Workplace Racism, someone asked about where the archives of Mr. Williams had been on the program to talk about workplace racism, where they were. And I shared one during the program, got another one, and shared it out during the week. But one suggestion that he gave that is, I think, legendary, should work under almost, it will probably should work under every situation. He said, when people come in and they're gossiping and talking about Fred and there's nothing constructive, and what are you thinking? Rah, 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 rah. This person is rah, 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 trying to triangulate you into something. They say whatever they say. You can interrupt them too. That's always an option. You know, I don't want to hear any of that. But he said, what option that you can use? You let them say all that, blah, 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 blah. And they get to the end. They said, all right, Drafted Mania, what do you think about old Fred? After they said all that. And you can say, wow, it sounds like Fred might need help. What can we do to help Fred? Legend, because you still are in the question lane, which is exactly what we say every time. And, uh-oh, now it's not we just going to sit around here and Fred is a no good, dirty so-and-so. And uh-oh, let's do something to help Fred out. Let's see if we can help him solve a few problems. Every time. What will happen if they don't want to do that and they just came to start trouble, they will leave. What? Help Fred? I thought we were just going to call him a coon. I'm going to go talk to somebody else so we can call him name. No problem there. I can go back to work. Or we will figure out a constructive way to help Fred. And if Fred is a black person, woo, win on all accounts. Legend from Mr. Edward Williams. We'll get his commercial in just since his name was mentioned.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? At counterracism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Founded by Mr. Edward Williams Jr. He's been a guest on the broadcast many, many, many times over the years. And investor. The accusation that you've been talking too long, that's always a great one to be able to ask. Well, how long? Like, to get all of the specifics. Was I talking? To whom? All of the details, if it's an accusation. I just said that they accuse us of stuff all the time. The gossip, I think I've talked for years about trying to get a reputation as someone who is about business. I'm here trying to get a raise. I'm here trying to get a promotion. I am on my job. I do not have time to talk about goofiness. Who was wearing what yesterday and who is dating such and such. And can you believe... Come on. Like, I am not on any of that. And to be known for behaving in that type of way. and I already said the one about what can we do to help. And just to reiterate, when you kind of suspect or conclude that this individual, white or non-white, is just talking to you with a motive. They're trying to get you aroused, trying to get you angry, or trying to get you drawn into a scenario. That's why I say having your composure, that is key, where you can stay calm, you can think, you can use logic to help you assess what's happening and what's the best thing for me to say here. And sometimes it might be, there's something suspicious about this. I don't know what to say. So that's what I'm going to do. You know what? I can't even say anything right now because I need a little time to think. And unless someone is up to no good, that should be acceptable. Like, you get a little time. That time might be a day. It might be a month. It might be 5 minutes. But let me take some time to think on that, and I'll get back to you. That is totally acceptable, but do not just be kind of drawn into, particularly if it's something where it's making statements, you talking so that somebody can take this back on the record that you said such and such about this employee, about this policy, or anything. I said that, you know, for years too. Anytime that we're talking as though every employee of the company is listening. So just the same in terms of being mindful about what we say and definitely keeping our composure. That is the most important aspect to counter racism in the workplace, maybe in general, keeping your composure. Can't let our emotions get the best of us. Other folks who dialed in.
Can I just say one more? I'm sorry.
Is it a quick one?
Gus, can I just say one more thing? Yeah, I was just going to say it's a lot of, you know, abuse by proxy too, you know, because like unjust networking, because, you know, when groups of people know each other, you know, when they talk about things, then they can get their friends to side with, and then they'll, you know, start trying, you know, chiming in on the abuse also. So, you know, that's another thing that you have to watch out for on these jobs too. And the gentleman from Florida talks about that a lot. So that's all I wanted to share.
Absolutely. That's why I said, you know, we can't be there with an expectation that, you know, we're all friends, and the gossiping and rumors and all of that. I think that's pretty standard in most of the workplaces that I've been, people talking about each other. And most of the time it's not in a talking about someone with designs on helping this person solve a problem. So just being prepared for that. We go in a work environment. These are not my homies. These are not my sisters and brothers. These are suspected racists and victims who may or may not behave in a constructive manner, certainly may or may not behave in a courteous manner. I will not be surprised if it is, you know, discourteous. I'll have a code for that, too. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, I'll give out the number 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who are with us, if you have comments to share, feel free. Folks are waiting while folks are getting their thoughts together. Again, no spectators. Let's see. Person wrote in. Let's see. This is a black male. He writes in, updates and observations from the education plantation. On Halloween at my campus, the principal approved costumes for staff and students as long as they were in dress code. Now, just in general for Halloween, I already know this is going to go bad because it's just it's permission to be tacky and racist and crude. That's what the whole day is about. So, you know, let's see. So I was signing in a visitor when two of the white women teachers came up to me in their costume. One of them was attempting to hand me something, and I hadn't noticed their costumes since I was busy. After taking a second look, I realized that they were dressed up as my two black co-workers. Only thing missing was blackface. They were dressed in business casual like my two co-workers, and they had on the "Hello, my name is" name tags, and the first racist suspect teacher said, "I'm black male co-worker one, and she's black male co-worker two." So if I'm understanding this, you have a white woman who has dressed up like a black male. Wow. Okay. After returning to the office, I asked my two coworkers, had they seen their doubles? They said they knew and joked about how the two white women teachers were only missing blackface, and that had they did, that they would have reported it. My two coworkers used their own codification to avoid taking a picture with the two white women dressed as them. I love it. I love it. I love it. Bravo. I am sure that they wanted to do some sort of tacky arrangement. Like, come, let's get a photo. Get on Insta. Ugh. Bravo. I lost my place. I was so busy celebrating. Let's see. Okay. Another observation. My campus was short a few substitutes, so I had to cover a racist suspect's classroom. This white woman teacher taught history. The high school students were learning about Ida B. Wells. Are you serious? Wow, Southern horrors. I cannot believe, I don't think they mentioned Ida B. Wells in my high school at all. That is, wow, that's amazing. Anyway, the assignment had a glossary at the back. It included one term from the assignment in my report. I also had to go to a black male teacher's classroom to fix his printer. The black male taught English. I looked at his classroom set of books, which include, come on, are you serious? Jesus. The black male English teacher. I looked at his classroom set of books, which included The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. And The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, as read on the Cows Book Club. I didn't see a copy of The Hate U Give. Thank God. Formerly the worst book ever on the Cows Book Club. Woo! Ku Klux Klan as defined on the class assignment. Uh-oh, let's hear. A white supremacist organization formed shortly after the Civil War, the Klan's main activity in the late 19th and early 20th century was to terrorize black people who challenged white supremacy. What school is this? That is crazy. I guess they get a thumbs down on having Henrietta Lacks in the classroom. I don't know if you get a thumbs up for The Bluest Eye, because that's pretty common to be taught in schools. I've seen that in a lot of schools, so you don't get a thumbs up for that. Thumbs up for No Hate U Give, and then Ida B. Wells. That's like two thumbs up. But the white women dressing up as the black male teacher, I can even go to my own workplace for racism. I worked in California in the school system, no less, Bay Area. I worked in the school system, and I was there during, what you call it, Halloween. And I did not, I was super uncodified. I hadn't read Mr. Fuller at the time. I hadn't read his book. I hadn't heard any of his material. I had read the ISIS papers, but I hadn't, you know, really studied. I didn't really understand. So I was super ignorant about racism, white supremacy in all forms. Knew there was a problem, but super uninformed. It wasn't into Halloween. We were talking, the staff, mostly, almost exclusively white people, mostly white women, but white men were there too in our staff. We're talking about the holiday and, you know, how we're going to adjudicate with the children and, you know, make sure they don't get too much sugar and blah, blah, blah. And are the staff going to dress up? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. And this white woman, like with glee, to use one of the terms that was used with glee, it's like, oh, I'm going to dress up as Gus. I already called it. I'm dressing up as him. And like not understanding white supremacy, racism at the time, it was just like, that is, I'm not dressing up at all. Like I'm wearing my normal clothes, trying to get through the day safe, much less, why am I trying to dress up like a coworker? Like pattern. That's why I say, if we talked about this, we would see the patterns. We'd see it super clear. They just do the same things. But the whole psychology of particularly a white woman saying, oh yeah, I want to dress up like Roger here. I work with him. He's a swell fella. I'm going to dress up just like him. Get clothes like him and everything. We talked about that. I think Kizzy's cousin, she wrote in about the attention to detail that whites will have to our clothing and sometimes imitate. We've had several patterns. We've had several listeners who talked about white people that they work with will come in and look at their clothes and then ask questions and details and sometimes imitate your clothing entirely, even though it's not Halloween. They'll do this in July. Just, oh man, we got the same blouse. We're twins. What is that? Like, I have never seen a white coworker or a non-white coworker and said, oh my goodness, this person is so cool. Let me look at what they're wearing. I'm going to get the exact same clothes that they have on and then come in and, oh, we can be twins, or I'm your doppelganger for the, what? At minimum, like I said, we are under surveillance. And that sounds a lot like Delectable Negro as well. A white woman, you know, dressing up like that with a black male. But bravo for avoiding the whole photography shoot. I should have asked, because generally this so-called holiday is a major invitation for all kinds of racism in the workplace. I mean, it's gags, the drinking on the job. I forgot Traptomania had talked about that. Reporting, taking that serious. I'm sure there's so much of that. People drinking and doping on the job to be alert for that, because that's not really something that I was thinking about. I didn't really have people that were talking to me about, you know, hey, white people do a lot of drinking on the job. There's a lot of drinking on the job, period, in the system of racism. Sometimes it's encouraged. I never had anyone, you know, tell me to be alert for that and or to have a code about how to deal with that and to certainly make sure you're not participating in it at all as a black person. This could go horribly bad for you in this environment. Super important. Much obliged for the person who wrote in. Neutralizing workplace racism. If folks have thoughts to share, codification. If anybody else had comments to share about the so-called Halloween madness over the past week, I had forgotten all about that. If that impacted your workplace in terms of the costumes and all that, if that impacted conduct, if they had any tacky parties, alcohol and all the rest, feel free to share. I certainly would think it would be good to have a code about that. Not participating. I wouldn't even participate in the candy. I wouldn't have any candy on my desk or anything like that. I'm not giving out candy. saving my teeth. Normal work day. Let's move on to November and get through that as best we can without all the Turkey Day festivities. But number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks that dialed in, if we missed you totally, if you have suggestions or your own situation, proceed. Folks are spectating. I'll get in another one of our listeners' emails. Make sure I read them all. This is black female. She wrote it. She said, when whites want to be ultra refined and sneaky, they seemingly are always able to find another black coworker to use against their main target. That is what domination looks like. You can always get a victim to mistreat, participate in strengthening, maintaining the system of racism. That's plantation days. You can go get one of the slaves to do a little whipping for a while. That is, you know, nothing new. Continuing, this is exactly what they do in my workplace. There are less than 10 black people in the whole organization, and we are all scattered through departments, so you will never see more than 2 black people per department. There are white males at my place of employment who keep stalking, following, and watching me. This is also common, us hearing about black people being stalked. I just said we are under surveillance consistently in the workplace, but specifically being stalked and followed. We've had so many people, I feel like, especially recently, within the past 12 months, this calendar year, males and females are reporting that they've had white people who come and they will suspiciously linger in an area so that it's obvious that they're only there to spy, spectate, see what you're up to. That's their only purpose for being there. They don't have a work-related purpose. They're not there to retrieve paperwork. They're not trying to fax something. They're not trying to get coffee. They're just kind of hovering, checking you out, listening in. Sometimes we've even had people said, well, sometimes they'll do this and they're just kind of lingering in the area so that if you get up or something, they can bump into you or they can make an excuse to engage you in some way, shape, or form. Super common in the system. And I think just being alert to that, this might be one where having those mirrors at the desk, we've talked about that, so that you can see if they're coming to try to sneak up on you. I think it also can be a good one to call attention to them so that you know you're aware of them. Hey, Bob, can I help you with something? Hey, Mr. Douglas, you okay? You need anything? Okay, just wanted to make sure to call attention so that they're aware. I've seen where sometimes that can have an impact or not. But again, as I've said, we're under surveillance, even if they're not there. They got cameras. They got electronics. Lots of ways. Continuing. The white males, stalk, follow, watch. They unjustly network, that word again, with each other just to terrorize me, because they will come around separately and all practice their racism the same way to get a reaction out of me. They also love to try and use my black female coworker against me to get a reaction, and she's completely naive and confused as to what they are doing, as she is just a really pleasant person who is an unknowing victim. Oh, you can highlight, underline, boldface, print, victim. Victim. Not a coon. Not any of the other terms. A victim. I'm so glad that's what they wrote out. The whites, they are very creepy racist stalkers who I don't have any interest in, who are definitely dedicated. Any suggestions on how to stop this? With the using the black female to try to get a reaction, that one is tough. What I just said, when you have victims of racism in a work environment and they are more confused about racism, it can be very challenging navigating that. I think one of the best things that you can do is just to be mindful that this person is a victim of racism, and I'm just going to try to be as patient as I can in how I deal with them. I think those situations, I think it can be easier, the situations where you don't have the other victim to deal with, where they're getting them to participate somehow in all this, talking or whatever. Like the situations with the stalking, like I said, and just calling attention to the fact every time and doing it on a consistent basis with the other victim. The best thing that you can do is consistently not reacting, regardless of what they do, what she says. I would just figure out ways of asking questions. If you can figure out a way to ask a question, and it might even be asking a question of her that reveals truth, that can help. That can help shut that down. And every time, just being about, I'm just going to see if there's a question, if there's an opportunity for a question that can be asked. If there's no opportunity for a question, I'm going to make sure that I don't respond. And I might participate at all. Just be about my business. They can do whatever. And I just wouldn't participate at all. But it definitely would not. I would be super over the top courteous with this victim, black female. I wouldn't make any efforts to talk to her unless you all had super rapport. And then even then, it wouldn't be talking about racism. If it was something incorrect that they were doing in terms of trying to bring her in and see if they could get us in conflict, I would point that out, not as racism, but just being mindful. I think some of the people, that's, you know, something that they think is funny, to try to see if they can get us to argue or something. Just, you know, be alert. Like I said, I'm always hesitant about that sort of thing. Make sure that I'm super transparent about that. I'm always hesitant about that sort of thing, because victims of racism, that might be the sort of thing that goes back and gets repeated. So I'd have to be, am I comfortable with that? Am I comfortable with everybody here knowing that I told her, hey, I think sometimes they might be trying to joke around and see if they can get us into an argument or something of that nature. Just be mindful of some of the times when they're talking and trying to get us all to participate in some sort of subject. Am I comfortable saying that? Because in some situations, the answer might be yes, because that's what's happening. That's true. That's what's happening. And anybody that's using logic that watches how these interactions, these exchanges, how they're unfolding and what's being said, that's the logical conclusion that they would come to. So some settings, it might be, yeah, I'm okay with that. You know, if she goes back and says that I said that, I'd make sure it's phrased in a way where I didn't say that they were being racist or anything. Just be mindful of how these exchanges take place. If I feel like we have enough of a rapport that they might take that and just think about it. Like, oh, okay, Gus told me to just, okay, next time we come in and we get into one of these exchanges, I'll just pay a little bit more attention to, you know, what they're saying. What are they trying to get me to say? What are we even talking about? I'll think about that a little bit. If I don't have that sort of rapport, like if this is some person we don't talk like that, or it seems like they don't like me or anything like that, whoop, it cut that out of the code book. We don't do that at all. I just stay to myself, and I just do as much as I can to not participate in these exchanges, and I'm still going to be super courteous to the victim. If folks, since this person is asking for suggestions, if any folks have any recommendations, what you would suggest, there are very few black people here, and it seems that the whites on the job, they like to try to create situations where they can use the other black people to mistreat each other. roping them into conversations and such? What would you do to try to stop that, as well as the stalking, having lots, or it seemed like at least more than one, white coworker, where they're coming and just malingering, just to spy on you, just to keep tabs on you, listen in on you, keep an eye on you? What would you do to try to stop these acts of racism in a workplace? If any folks have suggestions, *61. Lots of spectating. Not sure if folks don't know what they would do if they were to find themselves in such a predicament in a workplace setting. I just shared some of the ways that I would try to deal with that. I think also just really reminding yourself you're under surveillance. Those are just some of the more flagrant forms. I would suggest if it's that bad, if it's that intense, where it's not just one person, it's multiple whites coming and watching you and lurking and things, it might be other things as well. If it's other non-white people, if it's electronic devices, I don't know if they have cameras in your facility, but it's probably even more than what you are actually seeing. And again, it might just be to get a response. As I said, I would call attention, you know, hey, Gerald, need anything? Can help you out with anything today? Oh, okay, just checking in. It wouldn't be like aggressive, like, you know, what are you doing back? Like that type of thing. Just total business, total about help. Everything cool? All right, right on. Just making sure. And back to work. That's the way it would be every time. So it couldn't be a report that, you know, he was aggressive and cursed me out and that sort of thing. Nope. He just checked in to make sure I was okay. See if I needed any help. That would be my recommendation on that one. And just remember that we are being watched. Let's see. As folks are spectating, I'll continue to crank through our emails since there were so many previously mentioned. Kizzy's cousin, she writes in her summary of racist antics for the week. Number one, I was going on leave a few weeks ago. There was to be a series of meetings which the partner companies I work with were to attend. I asked the race soldier Mayo, who was overseeing the project, when he would be sending out the meeting information. He emailed me back to say that he planned to do so in a few weeks. That made no sense to me, as it was very late notification. I queried it, but said little more after he copied in my manager into his response. She is in charge, absolutely. Needless to say, the inevitable happened, and there were a number of declines because the invitation went out too late. This week, I overheard the race soldier lying to my manager about the situation. He claimed that none of the partner companies responded, which was not the case. Some did email and asked for the time to be changed so they could attend. I know this because I was copied into the correspondence. I said nothing and did not let them know I overheard their conversation. Why should you? A couple days later, I sent my manager an email which incorporated the correspondence between the race soldier Mayo and the partner companies. I did not mention his deception. This way, she would be able to see he was lying without me saying so. I do not expect there to be any negative consequence for him. My aim was to counteract his blatant act of attempted sabotage so he can take over the project, which I conclude is his goal. Love it. And I think having correct expectations is a core component. I don't feel I say this often enough. Having correct expectations of ourselves, having correct expectations of other non-white people, victims of racism, and not expecting them to function as though they are not subject to white supremacy. Having correct expectations of white people. No, I don't expect that this white guy is going to get fired for lying. Much less fired. I don't expect he's going to get transferred. I don't expect he's going to get reprimanded at all. In fact, he might get a raise. He might get to fire me for pulling off this act of deception. That's what I expect to happen. Being realistic about that, not thinking that, you know, whites are going to do the correct thing. And I also think it's important because we get accused of things falsely on the job and elsewhere all the time. White people, generally speaking, do pretty well when they get accused of things by black people. There's unjust networking, whites rally to support other white people, sometimes even non-white people, victims of racism, rally to support other white people. I think even Dylann Roof had one of his victim non-white friends step forward and say he was Dylann's friend and that they were cool. He didn't think he was racist. Confusion is lethal. But I think it is important because us just going in and saying, oh, well, you know, Theodore lied. And Theodore's a white person? Sometimes, man, oh man, Theodore won't get punished even if he did lie, but you will get punished for coming in there and having the audacity to say that Theodore lied. I have seen that, and I think a number of us can attest to that, that sometimes it can be difficult coming in and leveling a charge that a white person did something incorrect, even if it was against you. So I can totally, and sometimes that's the best way to do it, to let them find out on their own. The evidence will reveal itself. And it's not I'm coming in here to snitch on Theodore for lying about the presentation and what happened and why people weren't there. That no, you'll find out and then you can decide to do something or not to die to do something. It'll probably be the latter. Number two, I was in a meeting with a different race soldier male. He's been working at the company for about 18 months. So I was surprised when he started talking very negatively about a non-white black male who had left the company about 5 years ago. 5 years. 5 years. Come on now. The non-white male was very senior and I guess had a reputation for making race soldiers feel uncomfortable when practicing their everyday racism. I was shocked by the level of vitriol in the race soldier's voice. It was so strong, I felt uncomfortable. I was also confused by the time lag between when both these individuals worked for the company. I asked the race soldier if he knew the non-white male or if they had ever worked together. His response to both questions was no. He was immediately added to my racist suspect list. Hashtag unjust networking. Everybody who wrote in used that word today. What in the world? Or again, what did I say? Patterns. If we shared more about workplace racism, we would see that white people do the same thing. Doesn't matter. Construction industry, telephone, communication, engineering, education. It doesn't matter. They practice racism, white supremacy, and do most of the exact same things. Let's see. And the vitriol, black male privilege, again, buddy, the vitriol expressed to someone that he didn't even work with and who left the company 5 years ago. Black male privilege in that sort of environment? You didn't even have any direct contact. It's not like he did something to you, like he withheld you from getting a promotion or messed you over with some vacation days where you had something planned with your family. That's irrelevant. I can't believe they hired that coon and had him working here in a senior. Like, do you know that coon had his feet? I mean, what in the world? I mean, she said it was so bad, it made her feel uncomfortable the way he was talking about this guy who's probably retired and moved on. I guess it probably means that this fella had a little bit of black self-respect. Maybe I'm wrong. Number three, finally, more recruitment shenanigans. Love that word. I recently volunteered to sit on an interview panel for another team that is recruiting for a number of positions. The request came via my manager to the non-white black people in the team. So I concluded this was an attempt to give the impression they are not practicing racism. As it got closer to the interview date, which was this week, I chased the lead for information on the recruitment process. Each time I received very vague information. As of last Friday, I had not received a copy of the job description, not seen any of the application forms or details of who had been shortlisted or the questions to be asked. I should have been part of the process. I didn't even know how many people would be interviewed. Yet they expected me to sit in on the interview panel. That conveniently leaving black people out of the process, in my view, that is very similar and probably some more unjust networking, but it's very similar to the process of excluding black people from proper training, where you're supposed to be attending these meetings or having opportunities to ask questions and get feedback on your performance, and just conveniently that is denied you. I emailed on Monday to let the team know I was not in position to be part of the process as I did not have enough information to carry out the interview to the expected standard. There was no concern or apology expressed in the response. I had already concluded this was the desired outcome. I determined I would not have my time or energy wasted. And that is a super consistent part of white supremacy, wasting non-white people's time and energy. They'll take our time and energy and use it to support their system. They'll waste our time and energy and just waste gobs of it. They know that is a finite resource. None of us has infinite time. We have so many things to do and such a limited amount of time where we can get things done. To have people that just flagrantly disregard your time and energy on a constant basis, that is racist man and racist woman. And that right there, just being mindful, wait a minute, this is wasting my time. Are there better ways that I can invest my time right now? Being mindful of that, that is black self-respect at the highest, in my view. Dr. John Henry Clark used to talk about that all the time. He said people would talk to him when he was older, and he said that's one thing right there that as folks ask for lessons. No one has finite energy. I would not have wasted some of the time and energy that I did with people who were about nonsense, with things that were nonsense. I would have taken that time and invested it in something else. That is one, if we can begin to apply that in a counter-racist perspective, whites waste a lot of our time. Context of white supremacy. The email is untiljustice@gmail.com, and the number is 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Not for spectators. Again, I hope if the folks that are listening in live, I hope this means that you are not being terrorized on the job. Make sure you invest in the cows. If that is the case, you are not being subjected to any terrorism. Folks are doing right by you in the workplace. I'm so glad that that is the case for you. Invest and then write down some notes on how you were able to accomplish this task so that some other victims of racism, we can enjoy that same level of ease in the workplace, not being harassed, not being called names, being able to get time off as we need it, not having our schedule messed around willy-nilly in terms of when we leave, when we come in. Much obliged to Kizzy's cousin for writing in. Other folks with us who have comments to share? Folks are still just listening? We'll assume folks are still just listening in. If folks are just spectating, we are not going to hang out just for the spectating. But if folks have thoughts or suggestions, feel free to dial in. I actually had so many notes just on my own situation with yoga and thinking about, you know, are you supposed to be talking about racism in this environment? And if so, what to say? The book aspect is one part of me was thinking, you know, it might be constructive to talk to some of the whites here about racism. But then I also thought, again, what I've concluded about what it means to be classified as white. For what purpose? That's a question I ask myself a lot, too. For what purpose are we having this conversation? What are you trying to learn? What are you trying to accomplish? And that generally, if I ask myself enough questions, that generally points me in a logical, correct direction about how to proceed. But it is certainly one I will be intrigued and looking forward to report to be working in an environment where white supremacy is said in those specific terms, that those terms are even used, that phrasing, certainly definition is, you know, more important than just saying the words, but the term is used, books are referenced, they are not ignorant. I also wanted to make sure I got in the process. I've said a few times, I was talking to a cow's listener. And I said, man, frequently in yoga settings, I'll be the only male. Frequently, I'll be the only black male. Frequently, I'll be the only black person. And I said, man, as an instructor, that would probably still be true in many instances if I'm teaching at studios here in the Seattle area and probably a lot of other locations as well. It would be great if some of the black instructors, if I could ask them directly and see if they have any tips on how to stay safe and avoid any Willie Horton type accusations. I'm, as I said, I haven't been able to have that conversation with a black male or female instructor at this point. However, I was thinking it might be constructive even to ask the white studio owner, do you have any tips, ways I can make sure that I'm safe, since there might be classes, plural, where I am the only male and the only black person, black male teaching. There could be all white women or a number of them. They're non-white females, non-white males, too, who practice there. But I mean, that's just the demographics of yoga. So do you have any extra tips? I already said about not doing adjustments, which has been my code thus far. No physical touching. Just using my voice to cue, watching my space. I don't, do a whole lot of getting close. I don't do that in my personal practice. I've talked about that for a long time in my personal practice, getting over in the corner so that I'm not around people and that sort of thing, and kind of keeping those parameters with spacing, even as an instructor. But yeah, like I was thinking I should ask her, and then I was reluctant to do so because I felt like, well, now I'm talking about racism again, but I felt like that's a reasonable one. Like things, any suggestions to keep myself safe from any accusations, things of that nature, being a black male in this space. And I think when I was telling the cows this, and they'd be like, yeah, that's a reasonable question. That's a logical question to ask. She might have some tips. She might know a few things that you don't that would help. She's a white woman. She is not ignorant. And I said, that's true. That is true. I had to think about it. If you all have a thought either way about, is that a good question to ask any white person, much less a white person that you are working for, working with, you can feel free to share on that one. Or any, like I said, if we have folks, you work in an environment where racism is talked about, whether it's, like I said, you work in a classroom where y'all are going to be talking about Ida B. Wells Barnett or talking about the history of the Ku Klux Klan. If we have any folks who are in some of those special environments where, hey, we are at work, but yes, racism is going to be discussed here. Have you worked out a code for what you say, what you don't say, how you function in that environment? That would be good to hear because that's unique. And I do know we have some black people who function in those type of spaces. That's going to be kind of a different type of, or it could be, I'll put it that way. It could be a different type of code working in that environment. Any other folks, suggestions, comments they'd like to share?
Well, I have expressed, I think, more than once that I had, in a lot of cases, the consistency of where racism, white supremacy was talked at in the workplace, in the fire station. It presents a lot of opportunities because of the items that are consistent with a quote-unquote firehouse or fire station. Literally, in some cases, it was a house itself. Like books, the television. You know, television was always on. It wasn't unusual in the environment where the majority of the employees of that shift would be non-white black people. They call those soul patrols. That's what the white people identified them as, and also some blacks copied the distinction. And in an environment where they would be non-white people and white people, the discussion would come up. It depends on who were the personalities in some cases. And then again, in some cases, it wouldn't necessarily have to be anybody in particular, because I mean, it'd be, let's say, a news, be watching the news, which is something that was consistent, that when the news did come up in and around 6 or 5 or something like that, the television would be on the news. And of course, they would be something either close to or directly involving racism, white supremacy. And comments would be made. In my case, and some others, we would actually present a question, you know, on the subject. And that would start a discussion. So it wasn't unusual in my employment at all. Wrapped around going on emergency calls during those 24 hours.
In between dumping urine and genitals on people. Much obliged.
It's fine time for that, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's fine time for that.
Oh, yeah. Much obliged. Retired member of the Soul Patrol. Got that one into Black Brother and Soul Brother and all the rest of it. Like, keep it tiny. He said what I thought was important. He said he didn't say that was the name that the black people came up with. He said that's what the white people used to call the unit, the Soul Patrol. Now, see that right there. Keep it tacky. Keep it tacky. They don't understand racism, but that's the Soul Patrol. What do you mean the Soul Patrol? Anyway, that's another diversity crisis right there. Anyway, yeah, see, having a asking a question, because you can do some of the same things. That's what I said. That's what I recommend. Just ask a question. If they want to talk about racism, white supremacy, whoop-de-doo. I'm not jumping in as a discussion, per se, even about Henrietta. That was what I was thinking, going back to my situation. I don't know that I want to get into a discussion with people that I work with about Henrietta Lacks. But having read that book, I certainly might be able to ask a question, which I had been thinking about. I think I said that before. What question would you ask a white person about that book? I think we even had some people who submitted questions. I think Thomas in New York had a question. How did the book make you feel about black people? That might be a good question. I'll write these down. How did the book make you feel about black people? I'll ask and then I can report back my answers. Feel about black people. If I think of any other good questions, I'll ask. And any of the folks, if you listen to the book club, Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, 2014, what questions would you ask a white person who says that they like this book or think this is an important book? This is a good book. They read this book. What sort of questions would you ask them? I'll see. I can do that. Workplace where I feel comfortable asking questions in almost any environment. Yeah, I'll think about that.
I would ask how would you articulate justice with that particular situation or something of similar situation? How would you articulate justice for that person who obviously was victimized?
Obvious. She and her family. That was one I thought was important as well. We were discussing some of the root of war. She was sharing some of her thoughts about the book. I was going to say we were discussing. That wasn't the case. She was sharing some of her thoughts on the book as I was listening. And she was saying, you know, what they did to her without her permission, this black woman and blah, blah, blah. And she didn't include, it wasn't just this black female. It was her family that they also lied to and stole their genetic material after the fact. They had already done it once, and it wasn't, oh, we learned, let's not do that before. Let's see if maybe we'll do it correct this time. We'll ask permission. That's not what they did. She left that part out. That's why I said, it's not like I on a job situation, I would get into that detailed of an account with a white person. But Maybe, I guess, if we were in a school, I guess the only difference might be if it was a school setting. Now, if we were in a classroom, oh, yeah, let's go to town, because that's just a rigorous interpretation of the text. You're leaving out important components of the text. Isn't that right? Yep. If it was a classroom or education setting, that would be a little different. But anything other than that, I wouldn't get into all that. These would just be notes I would store and keep to myself just because I know that. Another change I can tell you all, I think I've been saying for almost the entire time. I think the entire time I've been practicing yoga wearing my Please Treat Me Like I Am a White Person t-shirt. That is my yoga uniform for every class. I would not wear that shirt to teach in. And I had already come to that conclusion before, because that's the same thing I had said here. I would not wear that shirt to a job. Why? What problem am I trying to solve by wearing that shirt to a job? Exactly. I've told people before I wouldn't, you know, encourage people to do that. So I don't wear it if I'm going to teach. And I don't wear it to every class going to the studio, even if I'm just going to practice, because I still view that as a work environment. Although I do wear it, and I wear my Cal's Yoga Retreat shirt as well. Even though I'm not sure I would encourage people to do that. If I was talking to somebody else and you said you were going to your work facility, whatever your work facility is, even if you were not going to be on hours, I don't know if I'd say, oh, yeah, wear your Please Treat Me Like I'm a White Person t-shirt. Like, thank you for promoting the program, but I don't think I would suggest that. That being said, I do wear my Please Treat Me Like I'm a White Person t-shirt to the studio when I'm practicing, not teaching. And I've worn my Cal's t-shirt as well, which does have a picture of the Klansman. A Klansman on the front. It's got the Coon Man. Governor Ralph Northam is on the front of the shirt. But, you know, that's just when I'm practicing, and that's just a part of, you know, my counter-racist code in doing my experiment. But I do make adjustments. You just try to think about that environment. Like, what problem am I trying to solve? I'm trying to do things so that I can solve problems without creating new problems, and having correct expectations about, if I understand racism, I understand what it means to be classified as white, how do I think they would respond logically, given if those things are true? I think that's super important. That's what I try to recommend on the program when I speak and give out suggestions. That's what I try to apply myself when I'm not broadcasting. So yeah, I'm looking forward to sharing more. And if you have any questions you would ask, what would be just Henrietta Lacks that you would ask a white person who's read that book, Henrietta Lacks, let me know. Our educators, since they got that on the shelves, if you have any thoughts, you can let me know as well. Other folks, any thoughts they would like to share? Not spectating. *61. Assume folks are still spectating. Did see some folks who had a hand up that we missed. I'm not sure if we had interference, because I do know that can be a problem from time to time, where there's some peculiarities in trying to dial in or that sort of thing. So hopefully no interference. I do see some folks with hands that we missed, but the number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. While I have the time, there was a report that I shared this week, since I did mention the NFL previously, and it said that the NFL got their worst diversity score. You can put that in as another one. I guess they had a diversity crisis this last week in October. They said they got their worst diversity score in 15 years on race and gender. They added that gender thing in. I guess they're not hiring enough white women for whatever jobs they want them to have in the NFL and race. Now, notice they still don't say the NFL is practicing racism, white supremacy in hiring. This is another illustration of workplace racism. They don't say that. That's why I said somebody gets paid a lot of money to come up with phrasing like that, to say, as opposed to this is racism, we'll just say that they have a low diversity score. And you'll understand that to mean that we don't hire very many niggers in the NFL, even though we got tons of niggers who run up and down the field getting brain damage and everything else. We'll let them do that. Might let them sell some popcorn in the stands, maybe. But actually have a job coaching or owning it? I don't.
I don't know if that's nigger work. Like that, that sounds like, what was it in Toni Morrison's Tar Baby? It's brute work. You can do some brute work. You can get out in the field and bang your head up against one another and on the pavement, but sitting in an office with a chair, a job that you could do and not get brain damage that you could do for 20 years. Man. Got to get a new Rooney rule maybe for that one. But that report did come out, and I thought that they were the triflingness and the dedication to racism, the lack of sense. That would be another one. You're telling me the NFL, you can't find any qualified black people to get these jobs? Really? You got all these niggers out on the field. Somebody retires every year. You can't find anybody to fill these positions. The only folks you can find are white. Really? Anyway, in that vein, they had Mike Tomlin. They had his picture on the front of the article. Mike Tomlin is a black male, highly melanated black male who coaches the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's won a Super Bowl, in fact. He's been there for quite some time at the Steelers. They white people have been chomping. Oh, he should be fired. He's on the hot seat. The Steelers are terrible. And he's back. They've been saying this for a while that he should be fired. And they got his picture up. I think they said they got three black coaches or some really low number. It's not me. It's a handful. Don't have a whole lot in comparison to the amount of black people that play and have played in the NFL. But that was another trifling indictment, as I said, of white people being dedicated. That it's been this long. The NFL, they're celebrating, I think it's their 100-year anniversary or something really tacky this year. College football, I think, is celebrating their 150-year anniversary or something tacky this year. And you've had this many niggers put on a football helmet and throw a ball, and you can't figure out, man, we could hire a few of them. Some of these franchises, all the niggers that have played for these franchises, the Seattle Seahawks, where I am, you can't find a job for some of these niggers? Get out of here. Other folks, comments they want to make sure they get in?
The biggest hiring effort is the hiring of white females as coaches. I am beginning to see on the sidelines white women with whistles around their neck roaming up and down the sidelines of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Have at least two white female coaches, assistant coaches, at least two. So that actually, it's not black males. I mean, you kind of like saying it, but it's not black males who are being sought after. It is white females. And pretty soon, there's going to be a white female head football coach in the National Football League.
I do not doubt it. I do. And they have that in the NBA as well. The San Antonio Spurs, they have a white woman promoted on their staff. Now, I do think the NBA, I do think they have more black head coaches, even though they do not have very many black owners. Magic Johnson is not even an owner in the NFL. I think Michael Jordan is one of the few actual owners, but they don't have a lot of black people in really high positions there either. In fact, it was a black male at the Clippers organization who said he was facing workplace racism from Donald Sterling for all those years before he got in trouble with the recording. Elgin Baylor, I forget, he's a Hall of Famer. He's not just a nobody. He's a big time black guy in the Hall of Fame and everything, played for the Lakers and all. And yeah, I'm being treated like a nigger here. This is Donald Sterling, and nobody even cared until that recording came along. Speaking of nigger, there was a report. Has to have a little bit more time. I forgot. And there was a lot this week with regards to workplace racism. There generally is. There was a report this week in Canada. It says, this is the title. It's from the Montreal Gazette. A Montrealer was called the N-word at work. The man who said it got promoted. I am not surprised. It reads, the city of Montreal unequivocally rejects all forms of racism and discrimination, states a recent consultation document from hearings on systemic racism. But to Bien Blamour, those words sound like empty talk. For 3 years, the 63-year-old stage technician has been fighting for justice after he was publicly called. Oh, I'm not bleeping it out. So if you got sensitive ears, go ahead and, you know, mute for a second. Publicly called a fucking nigger and reassigned without explanation while working at Parc Jean Drapeau. Blamour says the Société du Parc Jean Drapeau, a paramunicipal agency, has not implemented a mediation agreement confirming that he was the victim of a racist slur and discriminatory treatment and promising a discrimination-free workplace. Instead, he says the SPJD promoted the person who made the comment as his supervisor. As a result, he said he was forced to go on stress leave and has been using up his savings since his employment insurance ran out last December. So this is a year. He's still waiting for an answer from Mayor Valerie Plante after the Center for Research Action on Race Relations. They got how many tacky phrases? Race relations, diversity crisis, microaggression. We got more of them coming, more of them coming, more of them coming. Blamour is also accusing his union, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, Local 56, of not fulfilling its duty of fair representation towards him and is seeking to be represented by his own lawyer. I'll stop there. But I mean, global system of white supremacy, racism. Mr. Fuller, his phrase is white people don't get fired. They get transferred north of the border. That isn't even true. It's they don't get fired. They get promoted. And I'm sure that happens down here, too. They do that for some of the enforcement officials. You kill a black person, you get promoted. System of racism. Other folks, thoughts, comments, suggestions, they wanted to make sure they get in, or folks just spectating for the Friday evening. Lame Friday, I said that earlier. I'll give folks five additional and then just assume that they are content to spectate for the day. We will be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Tune in. We'll review what transpired the last 7 days or so. If anything, hopefully nothing to report, but if anything related to the so-called holiday, feel free. I don't know if folks have children who might have had incidents at school or certainly workplace incidents. Hopefully not. But feel free to share. I'm just going to make sure I say again, sobriety would be best. I'm saying it now so that the sobriety checkpoints that they likely will have out, because I suspect that you'll still have Halloween parties and all of that nonsense going on through this weekend. So I would recommend being sober. At least get to one spot and stay if you got to consume any of the nonsense beverages and what have you. That would be my recommendation. Just be mindful as you are out and about for the weekend. But we will review all of that compensatory call-in as well as other news and notes from the past seven. The book club, Paul Robeson, or Dr. Gerald Horn's biography on Paul Robeson will be on our third segment next Thursday, not too far along into the book, but great opportunity to learn about a really prominent victim of white supremacy who did a lot, took his immense talents and tried as best he could to bring attention to the problem of white supremacy. But that is next Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And I think we should have the white author of Fire in a Canebrake, which is about the Moores Ford Bridge lynching. Took place in the 1940s, where they killed a pregnant black woman, in addition to, I believe, World War II veterans as well, but a third trimester pregnant black woman. But a white woman wrote a book about this incident of terrorism in Georgia, speaking of Atlanta. She wrote a book about it, and I, in fact, just played the report that they are trying to prosecute this case still. No statute of limitations on murder. And they're struggling because it happened so long ago. They're struggling to find someone to stand for the prosecution. And so this white woman is now going to be a part of the plaintiff's team as someone to, I guess, bear witness to this event. She wrote a book about it. She's white expert. But yeah, she should be coming to the broadcast in near future. I'll give out the exact date and all if folks want to do some additional reading to prepare. Folks in Georgia should definitely know about the Moores Ford Bridge lynching, studying local history can be a great accessible way to learn what it means to be white, how the system of white supremacy operates. But Fire in the Canebrake, that's the name of the book. You can check it out. You should be able to get my copy from the library. They got it on hold. I can go pick it up. I can read that and prep for the program. Anything else folks want to make sure they share before we get ready to sign off?
Gus, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Gus, I just wanted to know, I sent you an email. I'm not sure if you got it. I just was trying to see if you got my email that I sent you in regards to, I think it was a YouTube video I was looking at. One of the gentlemen I was looking at, I was suggesting you maybe get him on the show to talk. So if you check your email, you might see it.
Oh, I did get it.
I think it was
Chad. Yep.
Okay. Did you ever get a chance to listen to him at all?
I emailed him about coming on the program, and I kind of glanced at my email. Mm-hmm. It was a lame Friday. I glanced at my email, and I think he did write me back and say he'd be down to come and chat with us. So.
Awesome! Awesome! Great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm glad I was able to give you guys, give you a suggestion, because I thought it would be very constructive to have him on the show. I mean, he is a court. He's a judge. I think he still is a judge. If he's not, he used to be a judge. So, he would be able to talk about the racist drug policy. So, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. That's what I told him in the email. Let's talk about the racist drug policy, since that's his thing. But yeah, we'll see if we can get
Absolutely.
A date and time and all that jazz. And dude, always grand to question white people. That's what we've been talking about all evening.
Right.
Questioning white people. Always great to get practice doing that. Let's see.
Oh yeah, and in regards to, I think it was Kissy Cousin. She was talking about the young lady that I was talking about, how the racist suspects get the non-white victims to stalk her on the job. And you gave the suggestion, because I go through that also. I think the best suggestion is just to stay calm, like you said, and not to react in a hostile manner towards them. That's the best thing. I think that's the best suggestion that I've heard ever. It's just to stay calm and basically also to try to not pay them too much mind, not to react and not to put too much attention on them, because that's really what they're looking for. They're looking for, like I said, the whole point of all of this terrorizing and harassment is to get you to react to them. So she can just put her attention on the less attention, that she can put on those individuals, and by ignoring them, that will, that takes the fun out of them doing, the harassment. So that's a suggestion that I would have for her. And that's all I have.
Take the fun out. Take the fun out. Mr. Fuller says that all the time. I'm repeating, being in control of your emotions so that you're not just flying off the handle and responding, saying, any old thing. Be calm. Be in control, whether it's the stalking thing or the people that are coming to, try to antagonize you purposely and that sort of thing. Just get breathing exercises. That yoga is not just, talking gibberish. Breathe. Be mindful, be calm. Once you can get your breath back, you can take that time to just think. Because, sometimes you don't need to say anything at all, but you can think about how you want to respond. And, again, solving problems without creating new problems. That's constantly the way that we want to be thinking and constantly the way that we want to act. Let's see. The person at 8237, did you have commentary for workplace racism? Just listening. Maybe they're just listening, or maybe they can't speak right now. Let's see. Other folks dialed in. If you have,
sorry, Gus, I was muted.
All right, on.
Sorry about that.
Yes, I'm.
So I did find a book in my very small library on yoga books from a Black yoga teacher. And that would be something I would suggest probably add. You could suggest adding it to your yoga studio's library. And she's a very beautiful woman, and she has her photograph on the front of the book. And the author's name is Jessamine Stanley. And the title of the book is Everybody Yoga. Let go of fear, get on the mat, love your body. That is the title of the book. She is a beautiful sister. Quick synopsis on the book. On the back of the book is Jessamine Stanley is the wake-up call everyone needs. Her message speaks loud and clear, not only to those interested in yoga, but to everyone interested in truly, fully, genuinely living their life. So that's one book I found.
I found it. I think she's pretty popular. I think I've seen her before, where she does. I think she has like a YouTube channel and gives talks, and I think she's pretty popular, successful Black yogi. But that is one I will share. I would. Have you read this book, or you heard us talking and found it?
I have tried to read it. I just have so many books I've tried to get to, and this one is one of the ones I've been wanting to read. I have not read it. I am going to get into it now. And it's a really interesting book. I've never watched her YouTube channel. I've never heard of it. I picked it up at one of my professional, it was a summit of some sort for where I work. And she was displayed as one of the books to buy to combat stress at the workplace. And I picked it up, and that was about 6 months ago.
Wow. That is amazing.
So what's interesting about you and your situation at the yoga studio, I happen to be a Seattleite myself, and I have worked as a yoga teacher or yoga instructor. I think I don't know if there are differences between a yoga instructor or a teacher, but back 15 years ago when I started instructing yoga, we were generally called yoga teachers, not instructors. Maybe that has changed in the meantime. I don't know. What do you generally describe yourself as at the studio?
I think they use both terms interchangeably. I've never seen a distinction, because I'm even thinking of like teacher training. And when I've been at the teacher trainings, they don't even make a distinction there, but seeing like the people who operate teacher trainings are called one thing, and then people that are just yoga instructors who don't do that are called something else. They just interchangeably call everyone a teacher or an instructor. Like, I think I say both. I don't think I lean too heavily either way. I think I use both in referring to myself, and I think they use both in referring to their instructors/teachers.
Right. And something that just came to mind is that teachers are usually called that when they have a certain amount of experience under their belt, so to speak. And instructors are more newbies to the teaching game. And so I'm thinking that could be the small distinction there. I remember when I was instructing at the studio as a new instructor, I was called an instructor, and then my yoga teacher back then, who owned this yoga studio and had been practicing yoga for over, say, 10 years, they were generally called a teacher. So there might be some hierarchical distinctions there.
There's plenty of it. I'll have to pay attention to see if I'm correct or if I've just been sloppy in not really paying attention to which terms are being used. And then I can come back to let you know. But I certainly agree like 5,000% about the layers of distinction. I mean, my goodness, there's so much of it with, you know, what certifications you have and what teacher trainings you've been to and who you trained with and what's like, oh my gosh, like that is... It is as white can get in terms of just showing off. Like nobody does more showing off than people. Like, my goodness, how exclusive can I show off with my yoga practice and all the retreats that I've been on and places you haven't been and can't afford to go? And oh, yeah, layers of distinction. Absolutely.
Yes. And that was definitely my experience as well back then. I did instruct, and that was here in the vicinity in Redmond, and also in Issaquah, and Fall City. Mm-hmm. And I went through a couple of teacher training, and it was interesting, similar to your experience. I was the only non-white Black person there as a teacher, and I came into situations where, when I was instructing, where we were encouraged to touch the students when they didn't assume the pose in the proper manner so that they would be aligned within the pose. So sometimes I would have to basically just nudge them into the pose by maybe gently touching their spine at the right place so that they would feel themselves into the position, into the posture. So there was some slight touching, but with some I could sense that they were uncomfortable with my touching, and then of course I would back off and then do my best at describing the posture verbally to the class. But we were encouraged to nudge folks into the postures by gently tapping on the areas where we saw a misalignment. So given that, I did teach for about 5 years, and then I just got a little bit discouraged from the pay that was was afforded to me, and I just could not afford being a yoga teacher anymore. It was just like being a little rightly poorly, so I just stopped, unfortunately. But yeah, that's my little story.
That is very common. Yoga teachers not being compensated well. Like, that's something that I had in mind. Like, I want to get to, my goal is to be able to make at minimum $25 per hour, and it should be like over that, and particularly for prenatal, like substantially higher than that per hour for prenatal. Yes, and private classes as well, which would also be substantially higher because there are white people who make that and make substantially more. So that's my goal, to make sure that I'm being compensated correctly as a yoga instructor. The touching thing though, like, you know, I just, I'm a Black male and I don't have enough Black male privilege to do a lot of nudging. Like, they have cards at our studio that you can put down as opposed to asking permission. And it has yes on one side and no on the other. So people can just flip the card for where they want. And obviously you could change your mind in class. Like, you could start off and then like, I don't know if I want this nigger's mitts on me again. Boop. And then flip it back over, which I do think is cool. But even like, I don't even put the cards out, 'cause it's like, I have no intention of doing any nudging. Like, we don't need the cards. It's like, we're not doing any touching. Like, I'll just use my word. Like, move your foot over there. Move your elbow over there. Move that. Yep. There you go. Like, I feel like that's more because you should be doing that anyway. Like, they tell you that you should be able to be precise with your words so that you don't have to do all that pawing and feeling, because some people, you know, don't want to be touched, but you can still help them get into alignment correctly. But even beyond, I just don't feel you know, I'm a black, I'm a black male. Now, I have gone to studios to practice heated, most of the time when I practice, it's heated yoga. And when I say heated, like 85 degrees, 100 degrees, sometimes it's substantially more than 100 degrees. So I don't practice with a shirt on. Females in many of these classes, white and non-white, I have seen them in bikini tops and nothing else. I've seen them in sports brassieres and nothing else. Like, you know, it's very hot. It's not like everybody is wearing a t-shirt and what some people do. I mean, but it's hot. Most people are not wearing a t-shirt. I have been to studios where people have said, oh my goodness, this nigga has not got a shirt on. That is totally unacceptable. And I feel it's sexist because I have to have a shirt on. Now I've had that happen. And I've even had non-white people tell me that, well, I don't know. It's intimidating to have you there without having a shirt on. Now I've had that from non-white females. So I can't even imagine as an instructor. I do wear a shirt when I'm teaching because I'm not, you know, practicing. But I couldn't even imagine if that's the thought when I'm here by myself just to practice. And as I said, I'm not next to anybody. I'm not trying to come in. Oh, hey, what's that? Like, I'm in the corner. I went to practice today. I was not next to anyone. I'm in the corner by myself. There is no row. Everybody is over on the other side. Like, that is generally what I deliberately do when I go to yoga class. So on Emmett Till and Bill Cosby, if that's already the thought process, I can't imagine if I'm coming over and let me tell you what you said, give a nudge like on their back or their mids, because some of the adjustments, like you would be moving people's stomach, like that's some of the adjustments. You'd be grabbing them by their waist, or you'd be grabbing them by their stomach, or you'd be coming behind them to do, you know, all of this. And sometimes they might, I just told you, some of the people, they come to class and they got on a sports bra and that's it. They got on a bikini top. And so you would be touching like skin to skin contact to do all this. Like, I'm good. Bill Cosby. On Bill Cosby, I'm good. I don't do the nudging. I use my words. Even with males, I use my words. I don't do the touching. I didn't even put the cards down for all of that. And that's what I would tell other black instructors. If they were males, that's what I would tell them, to be extremely cautious. The other black male instructor that I was just with, that I didn't get to ask my question, he doesn't do adjustments. I've taken classes with him repeatedly, and he didn't adjust anybody. I said, that smart black guy right there, think you can have a long career. Use your words and don't do any touching.
Here.
Let's see. We had another. Oh, we had several folks. I guess they were waiting until late. If you do want to come take a class, I am teaching Sunday, and then my regular class is 6 a.m. Thursdays. I like to practice in the morning. That was when my yoga practice started, was going 6 a.m. going to practice yoga. If people are awake that early, you can come practice. The Sunday class is in the afternoon at 4 p.m. and more reasonable hour. But either or, if you are a caller here in the Washington area, if you want to come take a class, let me know. It would be a hoot to have Cal's listeners come do a little yoga. Let's see. Irie, did you have commentary to share? You should be with us as well.
Yes. Hi. Sorry I'm late in the broadcast. I was trying to get some physical fitness on myself a few minutes ago, and I want to say that I'm sorry. I know I didn't do it, but I'm sorry that you have to, like, I guess the word could be demur yourself, like, to so you can't even fully, like, enjoy your yoga experience, because you're supposed to be, like, relaxed and not thinking about a bunch of externalities. And it's so sad that racism won't even let you stretch, you know, it won't even let you work out for real. But I wanted to get some feedback on something that occurred yesterday in a class I had. But before I do that, I just want to let you know, and it's probably a little bit of my fault because I know sometimes I talk fast. So when I had called and asked about the little white boy that was touching on people, it was a paraprofessional that was, he kept touching on, as well as a non-white girl. But it sounded like parent, and I apologize for that. So So she was basically trying to figure out what to do so she didn't lose her job, because she's his one-to-one, meaning he has to be within one arm's length of that young man at all times during the day except for her breaks. But the premise is still there about what should happen, and I appreciate people saying call the police, because I agree, maybe not call the police, but I definitely think that a police report, a written police report over and over, would force someone in the administration, along with an internal incident report, I think that would do it. I think that was very helpful, and I thank you and everyone else for that. But yesterday was an interesting day, as you found the plantation. I had one instance of some non-white black kids making fun of a young man who would be considered very dark or deep brown, or I'm not sure, but his overtones were black. They were. And his undertones were like red. And I thought it was actually neat, spectacular, because there's so many mixed people or mixed looking people around. You know, it's hard to see somebody that has that much melanin in them, you know. So the kids were like, ain't he black? Ain't he black? And I'm like, you're asking me this as though you're ashamed. Are you ashamed of being black? And he was like, no, I'm not ashamed of being black, but I would if I was that black. So I didn't want to get in trouble, because I have gotten in trouble before with trying to counter racism in class. So I said, well, I tell you what. How about we let human beings be who they are? Everybody has a right to be alive without harassment. And, you know, we got this worksheet that still don't have answers on it. So why don't we do that? So that was the first thing. And, you know, that's internalized racism. But the two interesting things that I would like some feedback on, there was a young man there. He is a young man. He's not dead or nothing, but the way his name is spelled, I'm assuming he's Vietnamese or Thai. He's very quiet. He really doesn't bother anybody. So for what happened to happen to him, I was shocked. So as the next class proceeded, he walked up to me and he said, you know, ma'am, can you stop him from bothering me? And I said, who? And he pointed to a white male. And this is seventh grade, mind you all. So he pointed to a white male, and I said, what is he doing? He said he just walked up to me and whispered in my ear, hey, pumpkin spice. And I was like, wow, that's a level I have not heard of before when it comes to racism. Like, so I said, tell you what, you write it down and take it to the principal immediately. If he does it again, and tell the teacher as well, but take it in writing to the principal. So I told that young man, I said, you know, school is a workplace. It may not seem like it because you're not getting paid, but it is. And harassment is still against the law of all forms. So I wouldn't be walking up to people whispering in their ear anything that you wouldn't want to be said as harassment. Capiche? And he was like, okay, because he knew he had done wrong. So then the last thing that occurred, which I really, really would like to see back on and know if I did this the right way or what. So in the same class as the non-white kids that were verbalizing their, you know, inner, you know, self-hatred, later in that class, they pointed out that there was another white male that goes around calling people niggers. So they were like, yeah, you should go over there and tell him something, too. I was like, okay, God, just give me the strength. So I went over there. I said, hey, I heard that you're going around saying the N-word. And he just looked at me. And I said, listen, I'm not going to accuse you because I didn't hear you say it today. So I don't know if it's true. I said, but would you tell me why that word is not something you should say at all? He who's like, oh, yeah, because it's offensive. Somebody could be offended. I said, well, I tell you what. It's bad because when you call someone a nigger, you are saying that you do not think they are a human being. And as a matter of fact, there have been women that have had children taken out of their womb because someone thought they were a nigger. Does that make sense to you? And he kind of just looked at me. He didn't really say anything for a minute and was like, yeah. I said, don't ever forget that. And I feel like I did take a little bit of a risk letting him know that because somebody could say, oh, I don't know, whatever they could say possibly negative, it could be said. But I just wanted to find a way directly to let him know just how profoundly unrighteous and incorrect that word is and racism is without saying it outright. And I did use what you talked about with the reenactment that you played. It was fresh in my mind. So that's why I was able to use like that, like really, really descriptive reference to him. I think it worked, but again, I'm still learning. I would like some feedback from parents or whoever has feedback. I did the best I could, though. So I'll mute my line and thank you, everybody.
What reenactment did I play, Irie? What is that now?
It was a reenactment of a couple or some people in a car that were killed. The husband was killed, and then the wife, you said the wife was in her third trimester.
Oh, that's the Moores Ford Bridge lynching. Yeah.
So that was fresh on my mind. So I was like, okay, I'm going to let him know that not only were people murdered, but unborn children were murdered in the womb because someone thought they were a nigger.
Mm. Yeah. Moores Ford Bridge lynching. I just mentioned that fire in a cane break. Wow, that's so much. My goodness. I guess that's so much. With the white fella who's saying nigger, I think that's great. I wouldn't have a critique, but I don't have one of that. I think that's great. I always think it's awesome when we can ask questions. It seems like you asked quite a few questions of him. I always think that, you know, stay in the question lane when saying that consistently. I guess one of the questions I always think is great when a white person calls or has been accused of saying nigger, is just, what's a nigger? And I think especially with younger whites, like, oh, man, that's such a money question. Like I said, I don't have a critique. I just think this is just another one you can add, you know, because there will be a next time. But just, yeah, what's a nigger? I always think that's such a money one, and especially with a young white person, because you can take that to so many places depending on what they say. What is a nigger? Why are you calling this person a nigger? Are there other niggers? Am I a nigger? And then Mr. Fuller says the killer one, what should be done with niggers? Those, I think, are always critical ones, because, I mean, now we really, like, yeah, and those, I wouldn't help them at all. I wouldn't say a word. It would just be, what's a nigger, Robbie? Yeah, I want to learn. Like, you know, help me understand what you think a nigger is. Why this person is a nigger. Am I a nigger? Is she a nigger? Just point out people. Is this person a nigger? Are there niggers at the school here? You know, lots of places that you can go with that one. Just see what they say. You might be, you know, racist enough to just answer all of them and just go right down the line. Yes, you are a nigger. And bang, and then at any point, what should be done with niggers, Robbie? I always think those are critical ones that can be asked in a work setting, school setting. With the harassment, since he said pumpkin spice, this is a different little white urchin. I immediately thought Delectable Negro, pumpkin spice. I think writing it down, key, and the whispering component, I think, is especially significant. The whole Me Too era and people making inappropriate comments that can be interpreted as something sexually inappropriate, certainly unwanted. Oh, yeah, that would be in a sexual context that this person is whispering in my ear as though we're in some sort of romance about pumpkin spice. And I think that we're... It is totally unacceptable. What's the policy to make sure that this doesn't happen again? Like, bang, that's the code I'd want, you know, my daughter or my son to have with that sort of incident. Excellent with that one. With the other, with the first report, did I hear it correctly that this white student is touching staff? Is it that the white student was touching other students and staff?
Yeah, that's where I, like I said, I think I spoke so fast that you heard parent instead of para-pro, which is paraprofessional. So, yeah, it's staff. It's dedicated, meaning this woman is stuck 5 days a week with this one white boy who has, in front of people, tried to either touch her breast or lift her shirt up and then escalated to totally trying to remove a shirt from a young girl that's about the same age. And she was so bewildered because she was getting to the point, she was like, I don't want to be with this boy. I don't want to do it. And I don't know what to do. And then they were telling her, oh, don't worry about it. You know, it's just what he does. But then the non-white black secretary and I both concurred to her to make an incident report on the school form every time, you know, in duplicity, so there's multiple copies for the principal, but then, you know, yeah. Oh, I'm just glad the week is over.
Wow, complete agreement there. Trying to get through Friday first. I would still contact the enforcement authorities to make a report. I think the incident report at the school is great as well in doing it every time it happens, but I would also still contact the enforcement officials. And that's another one just in this era after Bill Cosby and everything that's happened. That seems barbaric to have a policy of that nature if that sort of thing is happening with students and faculty. That is just, I mean, that is 1,000%. I mean, at minimum, I've worked with children, and at minimum, if it's a student who has any sort of history of acting out, it might be switched. It might be that this person does not get a female staff member. Or this person is going to always be with a female and a male staff member to prevent that sort of thing from happening so that they can have a little bit more distance, that sort of thing. And you have an additional staff witness, you know, to kind of tamper, you know, that sort of thing down. But I mean, that is Neanderthal policy that you're just supposed to accept being sexually assaulted by anyone, student, staff, anybody, get visitor, whatever, in 2020. I mean, yeah, police report. School incident report, and yeah, I mean, that is 1,000% unacceptable, and I can totally understand why a student or faculty, anyone, would be traumatized and be saying, hey, I don't even want to be here. That's totally logical human response.
May I say something real quick? And I don't know what's going on in other school districts, but you're absolutely right. It's very Neanderthal, Cro-Magnon, and it's also... What I see going on in these schools is a really big push on sexual confusion. There was even a display of, like, you know, pansexual flag, the asexual flag, the this flag or that flag. Then you have kids, kids that are like, yeah, if somebody calls me by my dead name, I'm going to sue them. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Oh, the name I was given at birth because I'm trans now and I have a new name. And then you have, like you said, that was sexual when the man, or the little boy, whispered in the other young man's ear to me as well. So it's like all this sexual promiscuity and all this sexual confusion in the schools now, it's no surprise that kids are leveling up to touch people or just do stuff that I just don't remember even when I was in high school, people daring to do. So, yeah, please be aware of that, parents. Like, it's like an A-game objective in schools now, more than teaching anything else.
Sexual confusion, massive, would not surprise me at all. But I would just be very clear that that is sexual, the whispering component, that's sexual harassment. The whisper, all of it, what was said, the whispering, all of it, and to write it down so that you have all the detail, date, time, all of that. And I would have reported the first one. In fact, that's the type of thing I think it would be good. Write exactly what I said. You can go home, write it down. I talked with my parents, and they thought it was important enough that it should be reported. Bam, go in and report it. It happened October 31st. Everyone was dressed like a fool, and he came by, and whoop, whoop, whoop. And this was the time, 10 a.m. In the morning. We were on our way to such and such class, this hallway, as much detail as possible. And even a week later, that's not a problem. I went home. I felt really uncomfortable about it. It started to bother me every time I saw him. I spoke with my parents about it, and they said to write a report. That's what I would encourage parents because sometimes that's what it is, especially with young people. You're confused. Even with older people, you're confused. You don't really know what happened and should I report and I don't know and that sort of thing. You're not really certain about the best way to proceed. So it might be the type of thing where, yeah, it took some time before I could, think that, the best thing to do is to report this. So, I didn't report it in the first 5 minutes. I talked to my parents. I'm still learning. I talked to my parents, and there we go. Next time, it won't take me this long. If it happens again, I'll be able to go and report it immediately. But yeah, even if it took a week, I'd go and report it still. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in would get almost over. Other folks who dialed in. Caller in Florida, did you have commentary, sir?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. My first one I wanted to share was that I had a suspicion about a decision being made without notifying me. Since it's four people in the department that I work in directly, and one of us goes to lunch at 12, which is myself, and the three other people have been scheduled to go at 1. Instantly, the white woman asked to go to lunch at 1, making it the three people who go to 1, which would leave me there by myself. But the way they planned to do it at first was to have people from the other side supposed to come and help with coverage if customers come in. So I think white people especially didn't want to, admit that I've been victimized again and mistreated again. So I suspect that the black female who went to lunch at a later time after the 1 o'clock hour, just at 1 o'clock, a decision was made, the white woman to go at 12:30 and come back at 1:30. But I've been observing, and then I noticed that sometimes the black female is going after 2 p.m. And this is also mistreatment because the white people on the other side, the ones that I know that can come over and help with coverage, they'll just, it seems like they're neglecting having to cover for this person's lunch hour, and she's supposed to be an assistant supervisor. So I had to go to lunch at 1 earlier this week, and the white woman turns around and asks, "Oh, are you taking a later lunch?" And I said, "Yes, such and such is out, so I have to switch my lunch. It's my turn to do it." So she was like, "Okay, because we're just going to have somebody that needs to be out here during the 1 o'clock, or like from 1 to 1:30, because that's going to be somebody, or that's going to be no one's out there." See, so it's kind of complicated. Like, I'm trying to explain it the best way I can, but people, like, they know what they're doing and think that I would be observing it, because they don't want to have it looking like I'm sitting in there myself. So the black female is going to a later lunch, so it doesn't perceivably look like I'm the whole person in there. And then you have all the other people on the other side. So once I was sitting there and I had to go to a later lunch, no one except one person asked me about it. So it's like, obviously it's been discussion about this while I'm not around. But I do think white people are responsible for that. My next one is the black male that has started working in the other department across the hall. Seems like some of the white women, or one of them at least, from the clique has tried to approach. It looks like trying to be flirtatious. And I don't know what she said to him, but she tried to bend over in the area where he would be able to see it. And it looked like he was disgusted by this. And him and the other black ladies were laughing at this attempt to, show sexual interest in him. But definitely it's a setup. My next one is there. I was speaking on the phone with a white man. I suspect this is a white man, because, you know, when you hear voices over the phone, that's just what I think. So this person was looking to get a case expunged. So I didn't know what the case was about. So he gave me the case number and everything, and I looked it up. Now, I had to end up transferring this guy, because I didn't have the resources available to me to help the person out. I had to send him to another department. So he had a felony from 2018, and I printed out this page where he was sending text messages. Apparently this is his wife, I think, or whatever, the mother of his child or whatever, baby mama or whatever. And on the police report, it was taken out of context. So I'm going to just one paragraph, okay, where he sent this to the mother of his child or whatever. And it says, now this is explicit. It says, "I fucking swear to God, if I land in America, the first thing I do is going to the hood. You know I know how to navigate the hood, right? $10K in cash and a bunch of niggers. Be scared, you bitch. I'll buy my vengeance. I'll buy protection so I can strangle you to death and have them hold you down while you watch your sister beg for her life, while your mom and you are gang tapped by 10-inch niggers." So I read that. Now this was after I got off the phone with the guy. All right. So I never talked to him again, but I wanted to print that out so I could read that. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
WTH. Man. PhD in white supremacy. Like, this dude should be like a registered sex offender. Like, isn't there like supposed to be some sort of protocol they're talking about that certain people should be on a watch list? Like, maybe you shouldn't have a firearm. You're on that list. Like, what? white people are not ignorant about racism, white supremacy at all. And I mean, like, the layers of that. A felony. He's threatening his wife, I hope X at this point. I'm going to go straight to the hood. I know how to carry out murder. I'll be able to hire some niggers. They'll watch, keep the area secure. I can pay them to rape your... And I mean, even listen to that. Like, who thinks that way? Like, I'm going to pay black people to come so that they can rape your family members while you watch. Who even is thinking of something like that and how I can carry that out? Like, I already know where to get the backup at, and I got the cash. And the, I mean, when Mr. Fuller says that white people are the most familiar mystery, Exhibit A, at the courthouse, no less. And then, wait a minute, we are in Florida. Isn't this Governor Rick DeSantis? That's the governor in Florida, the white man. I said he was going to win. They talked about the black fella, Gillum. Mr. Governor DeSantis, a part of his campaign, he was upset. He said, you know what? You all are talking about monkeying around and letting all these felons come vote and say you get your voting rights back. I think that was a big part of the campaign for the governor's race down in Florida. That was about a year ago this time, 2018. How do you do this? I don't even know if that's the totality of what he did, but I mean, if that's a component of what you did, felony conviction, this is getting expunged? Wow.
Yes.
You got black people who sold a little bit of cannabis and they struggle to get that off their record, to get a job. You won't even let me get a job at McDonald's because I got this on my record, and you're getting that expunged? It never happened. $10,000 raping, hire the niggers, none of that ever happened. Whoop. That is white power, not privilege. Wow. I forgot the rest of it. I mean, yes, the white woman, she came. Yes, the white woman came and bends over with the black male. I'm so glad that he had a code, because that could have been anything. You got folks who experiment in the courthouse. That could have been an experiment. Let's see what he does. If he drools or says anything, we got it. Bam. Bill Cosby. Like, I saw him. Lecherous. I mean, really, like, you have no idea. I mean, black self-respect and have a code, Bill Cosby. Let's see. I'm still devastated. The lunch thing. That sort of tackiness, I've seen that. That's why I said if we shared, we would see the same patterns. That sort of tackiness where the black person ends up not getting a lunch break, and or where you get left alone. They've somehow coordinated it where you get left, and that's not supposed to happen. That's a breach of protocol. You're supposed to have assistance, and that's all supposed to be worked out. I have seen where that sort of thing happens consistently. I have been on jobs where I was the person, in fact, who didn't sometimes would not even get a lunch break because of how things were ordered with the staff. That is not a coincidence at all. And I totally suspect that that's another one where there was probably some unjust networking. They put your water on the floor. Why wouldn't they have a little sidebar, the click or whoever else? Oh, yeah, that nigger is getting stuck today. We're leaving it. Okay, right. And I mean, that's done all the time, Florida and elsewhere. But wow, the creme de la creme. I mean, that's probably been done before. That's all I can say. That's probably been done before. They said that with Emmett Till, that the white people, Bryant and his wife, that they went and got some black people to help them kill Emmett Till. And then went about trying to charge the black fella. The person that, much obliged, caller in Florida. The person that dialed in, everybody waited till the end. 4731, did you have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
So, good evening, everyone. This is Napa Valley from California. I haven't, called in a while, but I do, listen to the archives, so that's how I kind of keep up with y'all, usually. I think I was gonna like I think like add a comment to like Miss Irie's the thing about like the kid who like sexually assaults the like instructors stuff. It's actually like currently right now I'm trying to train for this like one it's called like a behavior specialist or like a behavioral technician, and it's it basically works with like autistic children, and I've been going to like a couple of like interviews and stuff, and what I've noticed is that like they don't really I guess like warn you about like I guess like these things like potentially happening. Like it was like maybe the most like recent interview that I like went to that like the lady was actually kind of pretty honest. She said that like, oh, the kids might like hit you and scratch you, or like they have like super like violent tendencies that I guess they're trying to like extinct out of them like through the like applied behavioral analysis. So I guess for me, like, I'm not even sure if I want to go into, like, this type of work anymore. Because I just, like, wanted the, like, increase in, like, pay. And so I could, like, oh, get the, like, certificate and get more money for, like, just doing that. And then be able to work wherever else I wanted. Because there's actually a shortage in sort of, like, I guess, like, the behavioral technicians, like, for autism. Because I think it's, like, really hard work, right? And there seems to be, like, a high turnover. So a lot of people are always, or the agencies or, like, the places are always, like, looking for people to, like, hire. But, yeah, I guess that's, like, all I wanted to say.
Well, much obliged for dialing in live. Most people listen to the archives. I think that's done pretty regularly in terms of leaving out the hazards, dangers of a job. That's why I think it's important in terms of asking questions even before you accept the job. Like when you go to do the interview, they ask you a lot of questions. You should have questions too. And I think any line of work like that, asking about potential dangers, hazards, and asking detailed questions to try to get at some of the information that they might be trying to withhold. How many staff got injured over the last year? That might be a good question if it seems like they're not being forthcoming about how dangerous this job is, because they should have data on that. I mean, they do have data on that sort of thing. I've worked in particularly those jobs with children. Like, oh yeah, they have insurance. They have data on the staff injuries and where staff is most likely to be injured and what to do to prevent that. Like, they have all of that information. So those are good questions to ask because they will. They'll try and, you know, deceive you about how dangerous it, or that happens frequently. I'll put it that way. That happens frequently where they will not give us all the information about how dangerous or all the potential hazards of a job. That's why I say regularly. We have to take our safety. We have to take that as a number one priority, because in this system, man, it is disgusting how frequent there will be total disregard for your health, safety, and well-being. I mean, like basic safety regards for your health and well-being. So, yeah. Ask lots of questions, and I'm glad you were able to hear that so you can know about some of the hazards of that. We all want to be informed, you know, making choices about what job we want to work. Anywho, we did our 3 hours plus a little extra. And we'll still be here tomorrow. Compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll be here, white people permitting. looking forward. True. Just being true. That's what I said. Having correct, you know, perspectives. That's a very important aspect to counter racism. If folks have questions or suggestions, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can share them if they're workplace racism related or otherwise, let me know. Much obliged for everyone's participation. I hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. I get to say it again. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I already said about sobriety checkpoints this weekend. Just making sure that we keep our brain computer working well so that we can go about solving the problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a in a vehicle, passenger or driver. I already mentioned the sobriety checkpoints. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time. Excuse me. Let's make sure that we are not on the cell phone if we are driving. Just trying to, as best we can, minimize contact with the Daniel Holtzclaws, Amber Geigers of the known universe. Safety. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.